me ask you this then, Tony, from your perspective, from the time you started till now, give me the percentage of the player's portfolio when it comes to the week of the draft that is now coming out of the combine. Is it as little as 5%? Is it 10%? I mean, most of the work is done on these guys before the combine anyway,
right.
But how much work can be done now that it's become more of a deal instead of a real
What happens is, you know, NFL Network, they watch the 40s, they watch the vertical jump, the position drills. The most important aspect are the medicals.
Right.
Okay. And you don't see that, obviously, because of HIPAA rules and all things. So what will happen is when the teams get the medical grades, you know, from the fact that these guys are back there, their legs are being pulled on, they're being MRI'd, they're being x-rayed.
Nobody wants to see that anyway, to be honest.
But it is the most important aspect of it.
True.
I mean, we saw Luda Lely a couple of years ago who had a sort of a heart condition. You know, they were concerned about that, went from a top five pick to middle round one pick. It turned out to be nothing. But, you know, I don't want to put a percentage on it, because if a highly rated guy is medically red flagged and they go back to high school, I mean, a highly rated guy could fall into the late rounds. There was a kid, Brian Manville, from a very good tight end from Northeastern about 10 years ago, had to retire because they found something here. So, you know, what percentage is it? It's all dependent on the medicals, and then come the interviews. Because the interviews are very important, because they're going to ask some very hard, challenging questions. And if they don't think the kids are honest, or they don't get the answer that they want, kids going to plummet.
And now we've seen some stuff going on the field, Tony. Today they're having the offensive linemen run the 40-yard dash, which really is meaningless. How often in a football game do linemen have to run 40 yards at a time? They do keep track of the 10-yard splits, which are a little bit more important. But anything stick out to you, either from what you've seen on the field, on the bench press, or what you've seen in measurements that could have some type of impact on certain players' draft stock?
Measurements, not so much yet, except for the fact that Myles Garrett really looks the part.
Oh, boy.
We know he plays the part if you watch them the last 3 years on film, but he looks the part. And he's got, I think he was 6'5", just under 280 pounds. He's got great growth potential. You know, when teams see that, you know, they're looking at a terrific 4-3 defensive end, maybe a guy who could eventually turn into a Bruce Smith type as a two-gap end and a 3-4. You know, that sort of versatility. You know, he's got the great athleticism. I thought Garrett Bowles also did a terrific job here today. Was one of the few offensive linemen to run under 5. Not a big deal, but it shows his athleticism. You know, it's proof of his athleticism. Was very good in position drills. So Garrett Bowles was definitely the premier left tackle coming into the week. You know, maybe now he has moved into that top 15, potentially top 12, because he's such a tremendous pass blocker. He's such a good athlete. He's got to get stronger. But getting stronger is the easy part, as opposed to just the athleticism.
See, I thought the one you might talk about would be the running backs, because P. Ryan lifted an incredible amount on the bench press, more than even most of the offensive linemen did. And McCaffrey was really on the low end of the bench press. I saw a lot of stuff on Twitter about that this morning.
And that's fine, but you know, with the running backs, also with the offensive linemen, you want to see what their shuttle times are, what their three-cone times are. You know, the 40 time is important, but you know, in any football game, you rarely run 40 yards in a straight line.
Yeah.
It's the lateral movement skill. So, yeah, Piron, that was a nice mark. But, again, you know, the bench press is more, you know, an endurance sort of thing, as opposed to a pure power sort of exercise. You want to see the shuttle times, the three cone times. And when you watch the running backs later today, you know, they do drills where they're running in and out of the cones. You know, are they smooth running in and out of the cones, or do they have to gather and stop and change directions? So that's what you're looking for.
As we move forward here, Tony, anybody that you're really fascinated to see do some of these drills, where some guys, where you've seen on tape, maybe from a smaller school or something like that, where they need to prove something to you to really help your analysis of them when you create your final big board for the draft?
Yeah, Jordan Morgan of Kutztown State, who ran okay in the 40, offensive lineman, a guy who is a terrific athlete, but, you know, played at Division II. He's got to do well during the position drills. You want to see the testing scores, but you want to see that he could basically stay with the big boys as far as the position drills are concerned. So Ethan Cooper from Indiana, Pennsylvania earlier today, didn't run really fast, but the fact is he was terrific in drills. I mean, he's got an offensive lineman's build, very thick lower body, but the way he moved, the quickness, the smoothness, you're like, you know what, this guy has got starting potential down the road in an NFL system. He may take a little while to get there, has to get used to the competition. You want to get him in an NFL weight training program, but I thought Cooper did really well.
It's interesting you mentioned a guy from D2, because for so many years, there was a prejudice against even the FCS guys.
Right.
And it seems to me now the flow of information is just so detailed and so much, that's kind of going away now, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then you have guys who just can't get into some of the top D1 schools. So they spend their careers at a D2 school. Listen, they will look anywhere for good football players. I mean, you've got guys from Canada coming down who are now, you know, causing an impact and doing a good job. One who just signed a huge contract the other day with the Kansas City Chiefs. They will go anywhere. One of the kids from Texas A&M, an offensive lineman, a former rugby player, I believe, from Australia. I mean, you know, they will go anywhere to get good football players.
And you mentioned a couple of the smaller school guys, and you mentioned the FCS program, Paul. Two guys that we have a couple of fans asked me about on Twitter, wanted me to ask a couple of your draft guys about over the course of the week. Zay Jones and Cooper Kupp, two of the guys that we saw at the Senior Bowl. What's your thoughts on them? What do you think you need to see from them this weekend, and where do you think they're eventually going to fall in the draft?
Well, Zay Jones, East Carolina, it's not really a small school, but want to see how fast he is. I mean, he made a lot of big plays down the field at East Carolina. He catches everything that's thrown in his direction. Want to see if he's got that speed, that 40 time, that 10 time. Does he have is he a legitimate vertical receiver, or was it just he beat up on competition in the American Athletic Conference? A little bit more, same thing with the Cooper Kupp. We saw him at the Senior Bowl, like Zay Jones, caught everything, terrific route runner. People have talked about Cooper Kupp late first round. I don't think so. But again, what is his 40 time? He made a lot of plays down the field at Eastern Washington on a 1AA level. You know, is that legit speed, or is it just an exploitation of a lesser, of smaller competition?
I want to ask you about quarterbacks, because everybody we've had in this chair over the last couple of days, we're talking to them about what is a thin quarterback crop. Right. You've got a couple of guys up top, understood. But then after that, it seems to really be a dart game. And so many folks think the Giants need to find the next franchise quarterback behind Eli Manning. I'm not so sure they get one in this draft.
I don't think so either. I mean, unless a guy like Davis Webb happens to fall to him around two, which I don't think is going to happen. I mean, maybe they take a flyer in the last day on a guy like Robert Dobbs of Tennessee. Terrific athlete, big arm, but needs a lot of work on his mechanics to improve his accuracy. They may get a quarterback. You know, I don't think they're getting the quarterback of their future or after the guy who's going to replace Eli Manning in the 2017 draft.
When you take a look at that position, one other player people have mentioned, I know he was pretty highly rated to come into the season. Then he had a bit of a disappointing year in Miami, Brad Kaya, the quarterback. Your thoughts on him and where he might fall out and what you want to see from him this weekend?
You know, I never had Kaya rated higher than a late second, early third round pick off of my summer film work. And then he had a bad junior season, and he entered the draft, so we compounded that problem.
Why do you think he entered the draft after a bad junior year? Why not stay another year to try to clean that up?
You know, sometimes it's the coaching. A lot of his receivers left. Some of his offensive linemen left. He figures, you know, next year he got his shoulder injury. This year, what's it going to be like next year? Sometimes it's financial issues. I had heard it was more he was concerned about the talent on the offensive side of the ball that was leaving. That doesn't mean you leave, though. I mean, you're off a bad year. You know, what do I want to see from him? I want to see some zip and some speed on his deeper throws, because when you watch Brad Kaya throw, spreads the ball around, he's accurate in the short and intermediate field, but when he throws those deep passes, they hang in the air for a long time. And you can get away with that on Saturday. You try and do it on Sunday, it's going to end up in a deflected or defended pass or even an interception. So he's got to show more arm strength. He's a last-day pick. He's a developmental guy. Okay. He's someone who you're going to have to get into a weight training program, hopefully improve his arm strength. And there's always – he gets a little bit foggy between the ears, and sometimes that can never be panned out. That can never be improved.
What's your thought on Ramczyk, who's got the medical issue because of the hip deal? We talked to him yesterday. In fact, we were over by the podium with him, John. And, of course, he says everything's great and he's going to be fine. He'll be a full participant, expects to start opening day for whoever takes him. There's a lot of questions still about him.
And there's questions about his play. I mean, if you watch him on film, he's good in spurts. But the fact is when I broke him down on film, I said, this guy's not NFL ready. This guy is not going to be a day one starter. He looks like he has a soft body because, you know, he bounced around from college to college, was only in Wisconsin for 1 year. You got to get him into a weight training program. He gets a little bit funky with his mechanics at times, plays a little bit narrow base, so he's all over the place. You know, he's a guy who could be very good 2 or 3 years down the road. But he's got some downside risk. I've said all along, you know, he's a late first-round pick. I would not expect him to start as a rookie unless you have to force him in there. And even then, there's going to be a lot of bumps in the road.
So you think that there is a differentiation and a fairly large one. If you want a left tackle in this draft, Bowles to Ramczyk.
Massive. I mean, Bowles could be a top 12 pick. Ramczyk is a late first-round pick at that. And, you know, Bowles, I think, can be a day one starter and is a premier left tackle. Ramczyk is going to need some time before he's really ready to be a consistent NFL player.
Are you in the camp? I'm sorry. Are you in the camp that says Robinson from Alabama should be a guard?
I'm in the camp that says he's not a left tackle. Now, whether he's a guard or whether he's a right tackle,
right.
I don't know. I think my own belief is you put a guy at tackle until he proves he can't play tackle
right.
because it's such a priority position. It's such an important position. So if he can prove that he can play the right tackle spot, you leave him there. He's done well so far in the early going during his workout. He's stiff. He doesn't have great footwork. You know, right tackle until he plays guard, not a left tackle.
Zeroing in on where the Giants pick at 23, Tony, it's impossible to project the player. If you want to, feel free. But where do you think the quality of this draft and the depth of this draft, what type of position do you think would make sense for the Giants to get value for where they're going at number 23?
They're in a pretty good position, I believe. I think they can get a good tight end. I mean, I know people say, well, they usually don't do it. Well, they need a good tight end would help Eli Manning.
You think Howard will be there?
Depends on how he interviews. And the reason I say this is because there were two different O.J. Howards. The one at the Senior Bowl looked like a dead drop top 10 pick. He was a dominant blocker. He was a tremendous pass catcher. But when I watched his senior film, I saw a guy who was very uninterested in finishing blocks. You know, sometimes he was playing half speed.
You're the second guy that said that okay? to us this weekend.
And he wasn't very active in the passing game, although Alabama's a running team. And you got to wonder why he didn't play every down during his senior year like he did at the Senior Bowl. So I think there is some downside risk there. You know, if the Giants get him at 20, if he falls to 22, the Giants take him and they get him to play at his uppermost level, that could be one of the steals of the draft, no doubt in my mind, because he's got the size, the speed, the strength. He looks like a fluid possession receiver running down the field, and he can block. I mean, he's a very good blocker. It's just a matter of him applying that.
I want to follow up. The other tight end people have talked about is David Njoku out of Miami. Do you think he can develop into a good enough blocker, if not a dominant one? We know what kind of athlete he is.
Right. He's not a bad blocker at all. And, you know, he's just got to get stronger. He's only a redshirt sophomore, so you know he's not physically all that mature compared to the rest of the guys. You know, when he blocks, O.J. Howard can block when he wants to. When I watch Njoku on film, he's giving that effort to block.
I agree
he
with that.
He blocks with good fundamentals.
He's just very rarely on the line to do it, right?
And he doesn't have a big body of work.
You know, he
doesn't have a big body. He's only a redshirt sophomore. So, you know, with Njoku, the effort is there. The underlying athleticism is there. It's just that the experience isn't there. And the ability, you know, being in an Alabama weight training program for 4 years, as O.J. Howard was, as opposed to being at Miami for 3 years, the way Njoku is, there's going to be a difference there. Njoku, if you take him, I think he's a situational player as a rookie in the NFL. But if he applies himself and all the indicators are, you know, he's a hardworking guy, he could be a very good starter down the road.
Tony, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Good luck the rest of the week and have some fun. And we'll talk to you next time, right?
Thanks for having
appreciate
me.
Tony Pauline, DraftAnalyst.com. You see him at SNY as well. We thank him for joining us. When we come back, we'll take a couple phone calls with Bob Glauber from Newsday as well. Right here at 201-939-4513. Big Blue Kickoff Live from Indy at the NFL Combine. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys.
You guys can say hi.
You can
say hi. I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it.
I can read in bed and in purple.
Luckily, I got both of my parents in my life, and they've always been there. But some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids and those type of people by giving them some words, give them some knowledge, give them some love, give them a hug, that's what it's all about.
The golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated. Respect people. Show respect, listen to people, and treat them kindly.
I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
We're back here in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and now we're joined
come on in,
by Bob Glauber from Newsday.
There you go.
There we go, Bob. Get in here.
A little
Let's
closer.
Be friendly.
That's too close.
There you go.
The first thing I got to do with you guys is turn that volume down because I'm with two high
I've been
energy
hearing
guys.
That my whole life.
Yeah, you
no.
think?
Yeah. It is what it is, folks.
All right, and of course, Bob does a good job covering.
Oh, we're on TV, too. Okay.
Yes, we are.
Bob does a great job covering not only the Giants, but also the NFL for Newsday. So, Bob, we just talked to Tony Pauline about the draft. Let's kind of focus on free agency with you here. Overall, Giants' approach here this offseason, they don't have the same resources available to them they had last year of free agency. And some of their needs, such as the offensive line, it's not known to be a great draft class at that particular position. So what do you think the Giants' overall approach is going to be when that free agency clock starts ticking next Wednesday?
I think it'll be a careful, deliberate approach. I don't think it will be that kind of, you know, sign four guys in the first 2 hours of free agency and spend $200 million doing it like they did last year.
Right.
They just don't have that money.
Done.
I had a chance to talk to John Mara a couple of days ago, and he said that they're just not going to – they just can't be as active, and you can't do that every year. You got to pick your spots, and that was one spot to pick, and I think they did a terrific job of getting guys on their second contract. And that's so important in free agency. Now, you talk about a guy named Whitworth at left tackle, the Bengals left tackle, Andrew Whitworth. He's 35 years old, and so that doesn't really fit that paradigm of going for guys on their second contracts. He's probably on his, like, 10th. Okay? But it's certainly worth a consideration. My sense is that they're going to stand pat in free agency at the tackle position, and I think Eric Flowers, I am told that he is working hard in the offseason, and this is a technique thing. So it's so obvious, that, you know, with the hand placement, with the feet,
okay,
with his leverage. So I think if they can get him straight, there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be the guy. People may not want to hear that, but I think that could very well happen. Now,
okay, go ahead.
Now,
I'm sorry.
You can find guys in the draft, low first round, which they would have, and then, you know, in the second and third round. You know, there are free agent tackles who have made it. Brad Benson was a free agent tackle who won a Super Bowl and won those wars with Dexter Manley back in the day. So you can do it. And I think they will address the offensive line position in the draft. I just don't know that they're going to be able to do it in a meaningful way, in a way that you would get an instant starter.
All right. We know that they can't go after the top-tier free agents because of the money situation. Are there medium-tier free agents at positions the Giants need, at least in your mind, mm-hmm, that they could target to fill a spot or two before the draft starts?
I think there are. I think there are going to be some answers there. I don't know who those guys are. You know,
a position, let's say.
Oh, position. Look, you
it doesn't
know,
even have to be a name, but a position.
Okay, I think they would have to look at tight end. I think they have to obviously upgrade that tight end position. I think they can look at running back. You know, do you consider an Eddie Lacy? Do you consider Peterson? I don't think Adrian Peterson is a fit, quite frankly. I think he is not a guy who has run out of the shotgun well. He needs a fullback. Ben McAdoo has not used a fullback. Doesn't mean he wouldn't use a fullback, but that one just kind of stops me a little bit. I know he's a big name, but I think they can address some positions. Now, you can address some offensive line positions with lower-tier guys. You can, but I don't think this is going to be a year that's going to be defined by this big splurge in free agency. I think if Jerry Reese can find a guy or two here to upgrade and at least compete at certain positions, then he'll do that. And I think it's going to be a very straightforward, kind of boring approach to building your roster that the Giants would. They're not that far away. So I don't think you have to do an overhaul here. You just have to add a piece here and a piece there.
See, for me, we keep hearing that the tight end spot is very deep in the draft. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking if I'm going to sign a veteran, I'm not going to sign a tight end because I can pick somebody up, you know, in another month or so. I'm thinking more like maybe receiver, although there were some good receivers in this draft too, John. I'm thinking it's a lineman. I'm thinking it's a running back, although there are good running backs too. I'm thinking, you know, someone who's not going to be a tight end.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think I don't think signing a tight end would preclude them from drafting a tight end.
Okay.
And they're not going to sign Martellus Bennett.
No.
There's just not enough money for Martellus Bennett.
His number's
and
out of whack.
And quite frankly, you know, that number's out of whack, and he's 30. He came off a season with a couple of injuries.
Oh, he was banged up all year with the Patriots.
So I don't think you go crazy on that.
All right, how about a backup quarterback? Would you do that?
A backup quarterback in free agency?
Yeah. Would you do that instead of looking for the franchise guy in the draft because it's not a good draft for quarterbacks, according to most people?
There's no issue at quarterback as far as getting a franchise. There are no can't-miss franchise quarterbacks in this draft.
So you go stopgap with a backup, yes or no?
Well, do you want Ryan Fitzpatrick? Who are you talking about?
I'm just saying that if you're going to sign a veteran backup for Eli, years ago, you were around long enough when Jeff Rutledge was backing up Phil Sims.
Sure.
That kind of situation. Would you rather do that than drafting a rookie quarterback to back up Eli?
Or do you just bring back Ryan Nassib?
You could do that too.
Right.
I don't think Nassib will be back.
He's coming
off elbow surgery that was related to his throwing motion. I don't know if that's elbow, shoulder, whatever it was. It was related to the throwing motion.
It was elbow.
So there are some issues there, as far as I'm concerned. I don't Listen, Eli's going to be the guy for next year, the year after, and probably the year after that.
You got to have a two.
You got to have a two. But that's not going to be the difference. Like to me, that's not going to move the needle as far as, okay, I am really gung-ho.
Providing,
we got a backup quarterback,
providing
Dottie.
Providing the Iron Man continues his consecutive game streak.
Of course. Oh, boy. You have to. But now, you mentioned Jeff Rutledge. Now, you know, when Jeff Rutledge actually had to play, he wasn't that good.
Okay.
All right? There was a huge drop-off from Phil Simms to Jeff Rutledge. There was. And he was a very comfortable guy for Bill Parcells to have around because
yes.
he knew the system, good leader, very good locker room guy. But, you know, when he had to play, Jeff scuffled. As you recall.
I do recall.
I assume you will recall.
Oh,
that.
I do recall.
He scuffled.
He had a couple 300-yard games, too, but
okay.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I understand.
All right, I want to switch gears here to two free agents on the Giants roster on the defensive side of the ball. One thing Ben McAdoo said at his press conference in this very room on Monday was that you can't just assume the defense is going to show up next year and be the same defense. You have to work at it. You got to continue to do what you need to do to be that effective. So they franchised JPP, right?
Right.
Jonathan Hankins is a free agent. Yeah, heard?
They franchised him?
Yeah, can you believe
when?
That? No. Yeah, really?
When?
So JPP now. They have him under their control.
Right.
They have Jonathan Hankins as an unrestricted free agent. How do you think that scenario is going to play itself out? How quickly do you think they can come to a long-term deal with JPP? John Mara spoke to the media yesterday, said that is a goal that they have. And is that going to preclude them from bringing Jonathan Hankins back? How do you see the whole thing playing out with those two guys?
I think it's going to be tough to re-sign Hankins because that number of JPP is going to hang over their heads for quite a while. You know, almost $17 million yep. in the cap figure. I don't think that's going to be a speedy negotiation. I think they're way too far apart. I think that's going to go into early July, and they'll try it before that July 15th deadline. Then he has to play on that one-year deal. So I could see the real possibility that, you know, despite what JPP said about refusing to play on that one-year franchise tender, I think that it might come to that. That really hamstrings them as far as what to do, you know, with a Jonathan Hankins. Now, the number, if you can sign Hankins long-term, the salary cap number can be reasonable.
Right.
But you're also looking down the road. Now, this is a pretty good draft for defensive line,
sure.
defensive tackle. So you have to think that as well. You know, Jerry Reese has drafted pretty well at the defensive tackle position, Hankins being one of them. So I don't think that. And plus, you've got so much devoted into Damon Harrison, so much, a ton of money. You know, right there. So
and
I
well
think
spent,
fill,
by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, you fill in around that. You backfill. I mean, that's just how you have to do it because you only have limited resources under the salary cap.
Let's go to running back for a second.
Let's.
Are you of the opinion that Paul Perkins is better in a 1-2 punch, or there are some who are saying around here that he looks really, really good and could be a number one workhorse kind of guy? I'm not so sure I want him touching the ball 24 times a game myself.
No. I agree with you. Scary as that may be to believe.
It happens sometimes, folks.
Dot, I totally agree with that. I think he is – he's not a complimentary, but he might be a complimentary back. I don't think he is that workhorse back. I don't think unless you're Ezekiel Elliott or Adrian Peterson at 27, you look to guys to be that traditional 30-carry-a-game guy.
Now here's the question, though.
That doesn't really exist much anymore. And the Giants won two Super Bowls with running back by committee.
Can he
split? They kind of changed the dynamic of that.
Can he split that with just Shane Vereen, or do you think they need
no.
a third guy?
No, I don't think Vereen. See, I think Vereen is more third down back.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Vereen, you know, Vereen lost a little bit. You know, I know he had the upper body, but he lost a little burst last year. I want to see that burst come back. That first step was not what it had been. You know, I think he's still able to do that, but I need to see that. So I think that's, you know, you've got two guys who are parts of the puzzle, but I think you need a third part.
Earth, wind,
that.
And fire.
Earth,
all
wind,
over
and
again.
Fire. Yeah.
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 Exactly. They need a power guy, to be, in my mind.
Yeah.
A power back.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there are some of those guys in the draft.
Well, they need a younger, better version of Rashad Jennings. I mean, he's the power back, but he just wasn't.
Or
Brandon Jacobs. Is he Earth?
He was Earth, yes.
He was Earth.
He was.
He was Earth.
He was.
Ward was Wind, and Bradshaw was Fire.
Correct.
Okay. Correct, yes.
Love it.
Yeah.
We had a writer thing. We had Girth, Wind, and Fire. I was Wind, the windbag. Girth, one of the bigger writers. And
who
was Fires.
Girth?
I don't know who Girth was.
It's better we leave that one unsaid anyway, I think. Selective memory there, Bob, but I don't blame you.
But I was definitely Wind for the windbag, you know, yakking thing.
Overall, with this offense, Ben McAdoo talked about all the work they're doing to try to figure out how to get this Giants offense better next year. Where do you think they're going to be able to find the most improvement? Is this a scheme thing? Is it a play calling thing? Is it a talent thing? Where do you think this thing's going to get fixed to get this Giants offense back to close to where it was 2 years ago?
Right. We haven't mentioned Brandon Marshall, have we?
No, we have not.
Yeah.
Feel free.
I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of thinking about that very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That I think you plug in Brandon Marshall for Victor Cruz, who was miscast as an outside receiver, let's face it.
Right.
You know, they had Shepard. Shepard was their slot guy, and he is going to develop into a terrific slot receiver. He already is. And then you have Odell. What's wrong with having a big outside target who is coming off a down year, and maybe you can lower the price a little bit, but Brandon Marshall can really provide something here. And
would kinda, he
you know, they have to be able to break – they have to break the cover two defense.
Would he be okay not getting 120 targets a year, which he tends to get with the Jets?
Yes. Yes, I think he would.
Okay.
I really think he would. The guy's he's going to be 33 years old. He has never been to a playoff game.
Wow.
There's never. Right?
There is Chicago and the Jets.
Yeah. Denver, Miami,
right,
Denver. Chicago, the Jets. Not so never.
Wow.
So I think he would – I don't think he would be as – big a locker room guy and presence that he was with the Jets. He was clearly a leader with the Jets. He emerged. He grew up. And he was a good influence in that Jet room. Had a couple of hiccups last year with Darrell Revis and Sheldon Richardson. They're out or going to be out. I mean, they were a problem. So, I don't know. Marshall was more of a positive last year than just about anyone in that locker room. So, I think it's certainly worth considering. And, you know, to your point about what they need to do to get better offensively, he can help break that cover two stranglehold that teams have had on Ben McAdoo's offense. He does need to scheme some things differently. There's no doubt. He was very predictable. But
do you want to see a fullback in this offense again?
I don't think that's going to be the make or break thing. I just don't. You tell me a fullback – bringing a fullback in, and I know it does change. You can use a fullback in certain spots, but even when, you know, Heinoski was around or
Madison Hedgecock,
you know, they were used somewhat, but not all the time. You
in
know,
key spots, though, Bob.
See,
you
spot,
know me.
Absolutely.
I'm a big proponent of having a power run game. You know that.
Yes, and a fullback helps that. Who's the injured guy who's coming back?
Will Johnson.
And I think it will be interesting to see what happens in training camp, how they would use him.
Well, he's a hybrid, and that may be the
way
to go.
That hybrid thing is fun. Right.
Right.
You know, an H-back. Like what Joe Gibbs used to do.
Heck,
you know,
Bear Pascoe played that for a while.
Sure. And it works. You know, they won Super Bowls with fullbacks, but I think the key component of those, and their run game was pretty bad both years, especially in that second 2011. They were the 32nd ranked run game.
Got it going, though,
season.
In December in the playoffs to a degree that was good enough to keep people honest.
Yes, that's the thing you have to do. You have to be good enough in the run game to keep people honest. And that just wasn't happening last year. And Eli would check to the run when he saw that cover two, and they couldn't break it,
mm-hmm.
So they're stuck. You know, he's making the right call. He's making the right check. But if you can't break it with a couple of, you know, maybe some cutback runs, and Perkins can be that cutback guy. You've got to have something, some element that will get defenses off of you. And they didn't have that enough last year.
I know it's impossible. Final question, Bob. If you want to give me a name, that's great.
Impossible that you've reached a final question? Or?
No, a question that's almost impossible for you to answer.
You could stay with us all day if you want.
The best kind. 23 for the Giants. I know there's a lot of time between now and the draft. Either give me a player or a position that you think the Giants might go for when we get to number 23.
23
in April.
That's a tough one.
Yes,
I think I think tight end if one is there now.
Do you like both guys that they're talking about, the Njoku kid and the OJ Howard kid?
Yes. Now I don't think Howard is going to be there.
I don't think so.
At 23,
I agree.
I think that's so I can see that. I don't think it'll be offensive line unless the Giants are throwing out some smoke and trying to get people off of this offensive line to let someone slide.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody, maybe an edge rusher. You know, you could have, you know, they, They don't mind stacking the defensive line, and this is a draft fairly deep in edge rushers. And then I don't think they'll draft a cornerback, but it's a draft deep in cornerback. So I think Jerry Reese does draft into the strength of what is available. So I honestly think, I'm not trying to avoid the question, but I think they can go any number of ways with that pick and beyond, and I think they will.
Bob, great stuff. We appreciate the time, my friend. Bob
Blauber
covers the NFL for Newsday. We thank him for joining us. We'll take calls for about 5 or 6 minutes when we come back right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine in Indianapolis on Giants.com.
Hello, hello.
You know, when you become part of a franchise and part of a city and an area, you want to give back to the community in some way as well. You find different events, different activities, different groups that you get involved with, and then you see the impact that these organizations are making on people, and then you ask, you know, how can I help? How can I get involved? And help out some people who are going through a tougher time, and it starts from there.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
We're back here in Indianapolis on Giants.com. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk. In about 5 minutes, we'll have Rob Rang from CBS Sports and the Sports Exchange to break down the draft for us. But we got about 5 minutes. We got a couple calls on the line. So why don't we do it, Dottino?
Okay.
Here we go. Let's go Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. He'll join us first. Andrew, how are you today, pal? Andrew.
Hello.
Andrew going once. Andrew going twice. Andrew is sold. All right, why don't we try Nick in the Meadowlands. Is Nick with us?
Hello, Nick.
All right, maybe we're having issues with the phones. Dave's back
Could
in the shop. He'll see what's going on with the phones, and we'll try to take you guys if you're still online at 201-939-4513. And it's funny, Paul, the theme that we've gotten over the course, I think, of this weekend, and it's one that I think could get some Giant fans maybe a little upset, is that the market in both the draft and in free agency for offensive linemen might put the Giants in a situation where their options are severely limited in what they can do to address that position during the offseason.
I think that's fair, and I think that
not impossible, mind you. It's just good. It's limited.
Nothing's impossible.
Right.
And, of course, when the season ends, you go in thinking, okay, best-case scenario, how can you upgrade a particular position or, you know, a particular facet of your game? And then you have to start thinking, all right, if that doesn't look like it's going to be reasonable, how can we then make an adjustment in our plan? The Giants may be finding that out. We don't know, but they may be finding that out at tackle. I agree with you, John. It does seem as though a lot of people seem to believe that Whitworth is going to go back to Cincinnati. So the best left tackle free agent is going to be off the board in all likelihood. I'm hearing that even though Riley Reiff may not be with the Detroit Lions this season, the marketplace is not exactly ringing his phone like crazy, or at least anticipated to be. And so all of a sudden, when you start talking about these different names, you're not getting the fireworks that maybe some people were anticipated, and maybe the excitement over some of these players is just not true. And even with these picks, we've been talking to how many people now. There seems to be a lot more mixed reaction and mixed reviews on those, quote, top three offensive tackles in the draft than at least I expected, John. I don't know how you felt about it coming out here. But many more mixed reviews than I thought.
All right, let's try the phones again at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. He joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Nick.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Go ahead, Nick.
Can you hear me this time?
Loud and clear, boss. Go ahead.
All right. I think what the guy was saying before is pretty true with Brandon Marshall. I mean, we were talking about receiver a couple times. I've called and I didn't know he'd be out there. I know he's up there in age, but he might be pretty good if it's not a lot of money. But with running back, the guy earlier was talking about, you know, you need a power back, Rashad Jennings. And, Paul, we were talking about Herine, you know, and I've been watching him more and more. And you remember watching film on Williams when he came out of Boston College? You saw a lot of holes open. And you're like, oh, this guy's good. No wonder they drafted him, but he runs right into the blocker. This guy, Pirine, he gets tough yards, man. He's good. But there's another guy, Paul, I've been looking at. Deontay Foreman. He's a big boy, and he runs like LeGarrette Blount, I think. Big 250-pounder, 6'1", and he's fast. He's got wheels. He runs like a 4'4", they say.
Good body comparison, I think, there.
Yeah.
Either one of them, you know. I'm kind of going against what I said before. I'll be happy with either one of those guys, you know.
I do think there's quite a difference between Piron and Foreman. Foreman runs a little more upright and straight, leaves more body surface for contact, which a lot of pro scouts will tell you is not a great thing.
And he doesn't run to his power necessarily as much as Piron
does. No, he does not.
Correct.
No, he does not. Piron is a fire hydrant, you know.
He's stocky.
And we found out yesterday when he did the bench press, he's a real powerful fire hydrant. We were talking to Bob before. I don't know if you caught the beginning of the program. He did 30 reps.
Yeah.
And that's fact. That's 30 reps with 225 pounds. That's a lot that you and I could never do.
That's correct. 201, Nick, thanks for the call. 201-939-4513. I want to try to get the two calls in before we get Rob Rang from CBS Sports and the Sports Exchange. Let's go Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's your point today, pal?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hi.
I predict Paul Dottino could beat Adrian Peterson in power walking around the track, but I'm high on Brandon Marshall. He probably won't be a big money guy at this point, and having him on the outside, it's just a shame Cruz isn't there. So I vote for Brandon Marshall, that they go after him. And the fullback, I agree with what your last guest said. It's not the major part of the offense, but it's still necessary. Paul and I come from the Parcells era. And even the West Coast offense, Paul, you remember the 49ers had Tom Rathman. So
sure.
It's like 20% of the offense, short yardage, fourth quarter. So they do need a fullback. But Brandon Marshall, and what's your thoughts? Is Adrian Peterson any talk that he'll come here? Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Well, first things first, those actual moves or transactions have not hit the official NFL transaction wire yet. So those players are not available as we speak. Therefore, conversations that they might want to have with teams cannot take place. In terms of would you, if you were a team thinking about those players, want to at least put them on the radar if they were to become cut? You know, they could always be traded or maybe work out a deal for, you know, maybe Peterson goes back to Minnesota. Who knows? But I think what you do is, if you're any team that's looking to fill a hole, you look at these veterans, and the first thing you do is you check their medical, much like you're checking all of these rookies at the combine. And you find out, okay, medically, do our guys believe they can give us at least this 16 games in this season and maybe beyond that? Because sometimes that one-year investment isn't always a good way to go because the guy's already gone in a year, and then you got to restart from scratch. So you want to know medically where the guy stands. Second, you want to know then where's his economics going to fall within your structure. And then third thing you want to do is figure out, okay, the other intangibles. Locker room guy, does he fit, you know, the scheme and this and that. So these are the things you have to do when a veteran comes available. So I'm sure the Giants will do diligence because that's what they do.
Absolutely. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Rob Rang from CBS Sports and the Sports Exchange in just a second right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com, live from the NFL Combine in Indianapolis.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
I know I was put in this position for a reason. That's why I have such a passion for kids, because I know the influence I could have on them and any opportunity I have to give back, to interact with the youth and with people all around is a great opportunity.
That was a good play. Good work, man. Ha!
I feel like we are setting the example for the next generation. It's important for us as football players to recognize that we are in the public eye, grab that responsibility by the horn, and put ourselves out there and set a great example for the next generation.
We're back here at the Combine in Indianapolis.
I love giving back.
John
back
Schmelt,
home. I've
Paul
seen a
Dottino.
Lot of poverty, and you know, I just feel like that's our duty as professionals when we get to this level is to give back.
Combine in Indianapolis. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino. We're joined by our next guest, our good pal, friend of the program, Rob Rang. You can see his work on CBS Sports and the Sports Exchange as well. Rob, it's great to see you. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rob.
Doing well, thanks.
Rob is a staple of our draft coverage. It's great to have him join us today. And, Rob, we haven't had a ton of stuff go on yet here. We've had some measurements, the offensive linemen running some 40s and things like that. Nothing huge. What are you most looking forward to seeing this weekend? What group has you excited that you really think what we see here today could really influence how you start stacking players at a certain position?
Well, I think you have to start off with the quarterback position. I mean, just because of the fact that it's obviously quarterback is the most important position in the game. We all know that. But just this year's class is so closely stacked together. And in my personal opinion, Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina is the top quarterback, but I want to see him throw the ball well here. Deshaun Watson and Deshaun Kizer both measured in, of course, well, and then that was exciting just in that element. I want to hear them speak. I want to hear them, really command the stage. I mean, that's the thing that you're looking for, you're expecting at the quarterback position.
Yeah,
so
good
certainly
point.
That would be the biggest position.
You know, Rob, so many of us talk about how the combine isn't going to move the lever too much on some of these guys because these teams have done so much work on them already. It's this thick, you know, before a guy even gets here. But is there a QB who could suddenly vault himself somewhat near the top, or is it really that thin in terms of the depth after the top three guys?
Well, I would say the top four guys, because I think the Texas Tech's Patrick Mahomes is the player who could absolutely vault himself up this week. Now, I was a little surprised, to be honest with you. He came in just exactly at 6'2", 220 pounds. It surprised me. I thought he'd come in a little bit taller than that. Trubisky ended up being a little bit taller than Mahomes. That was one of the surprises, I thought, of the first day of measurements and all those kind of things. But when you watch Mahomes on tape, there's no question that he is a work in progress. Coming from that spread offense, very rarely was asked to make full reads of the field. But at the same time, the kid has an absolute bazooka for an arm. He has the athletic bloodlines with his dad, the former pitcher. And so because of that fact, he has the upside that I think in a class like this, is the kind of thing that people are going to gamble on.
You know what this draft class reminds me of a little bit, Rob? I want to go back to the 2011 class. And you look at the top 12 or 15 picks in that class, you have Von Miller. You have J.J. Watt. Now, Cam Newton was the first pick. But the non-quarterbacks picked in the top 15 in 2011 were off the charts. One of the best classes you'll ever see. But then, who else do you have in there? You have the quarterback that the name's killing me. The Titans picked, and he was Locker.
Jake Locker
was in that mix.
Yeah,
you had a couple other quarterbacks in there.
Blaine Gabbert
was in there, too. And then there was one other quarterback in the top 15 that did not work out that year. I can't think of the name. And this
Christian Ponder, maybe.
That might have been the Ponder year. So their draft was great, but people who are desperate for quarterbacks.
Exactly.
Little reach.
Yeah.
Do you see like this draft class could be that type of year? Because the non-quarterbacks in the top 15 to me are off the charts good.
No, exactly. I think that's a great comparison. I don't know that there's a Cam Newton in this draft class.
And that's fair. And that's fair.
But everything else I think is true. I think that you are going to see some teams who are likely to reach for some of these young quarterbacks. And if they push them onto the field as quickly as the clubs did with the Blaine Gabberts and with the Jake Lockers, et cetera, then it's all the more likely that we're going to see very, very talented players at other positions fall down the board. Yeah. And teams are going to look brilliant because they went with one of those edge rushers or one of those great tight ends, one of those great corners or safeties. To me, that's really where this 2017 draft stands apart from many others, is that there are four elite positions. Tight end, cornerback, safety, and edge rusher is phenomenal. And so if you have a need at those positions, great. And even if you don't have a need, then find a need and grab one of those players, because those are the ones who are actually going to wind up being difference makers in the NFL.
I want to build off of John's question for a second. Do you think that next year's draft, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but your research material is this deep anyway, is next year's quarterback crop likely to have better blue chippers or at least more blue chippers than what we've seen this year?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's very likely to have USC Sam Darnold.
And
Sam Darnold, I mean, he's only going to be a redshirt sophomore, but I think already if he was in this class, he would be that Cam Newton type of guy. He would be the number one overall pick, in my opinion. I mean, as high as I am on Myles Garrett and the rest of this great defensive lineman and, you know, all those other positions we just talked about, Sam Darnold, in my opinion, is one of those rare blue-chip quarterbacks. And it's, obviously, we have a very small sample set with him, but he has the size, he has the arm, and best of all, he has the poise that you're looking for at the quarterback position.
Now, we've talked about tight ends today. We've talked about O.J. Howard and Njoku a little bit. I want to go to that second group. Mm-hmm. Let's say both those guys are off the board and the Giants pick at 23, which I think is actually a pretty distinct possibility given how good they might be this weekend. Two guys that I've gotten questions about online about, Evan Engram and Gerald Everett. Tell me about them. How do you differentiate and which guy do you like better? And who else do you think is in that class with those two guys?
Well, I think those two are similar players. I mean, they're both in that 6'3", 245-pound range, you know, and that's the big question anymore is that are they true tight ends or are they more of just kind of flex joker tight ends or even slot receivers? And they both have played in those roles throughout their careers. I mean, obviously, the level of competition that Engram played at Mississippi and going to the Senior Bowl speaks for itself. I mean, he is just a terrific hands catcher. I mean, his ability to pluck the ball outside of his frame and move is really what kind of helps him stand out. It reminds me a little bit of the kid in Washington, Jordan Reed.
Wow.
That he can be that kind of a dynamic guy. Gerald Everett, in my opinion, is basically a slightly slower version of the same type of player. I mean, he's a good player who feasted on the competition that he faced while at South Alabama. But at the same time, I'm very curious to see how he performs here because I saw him run very, very well against slow competition, and it seemed like the top competition he struggled with a little bit more.
Rob, I'm going to put you on the spot here because since getting to the combine, I'm hearing that there are fewer people excited about the three leading tackle prospects in the first round than maybe I heard a month or so ago. Not that these guys are not good guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all heard them talk at the podium, and they've all said very nice things. But it just seems that the star has lost a little bit of its luster on all three of them, from what I could tell. Is that true in your mind?
It is in my mind. I mean, I've been pretty low on these guys for a long time now. I mean, you know, if you start off with Cam Robinson from Alabama, I mean, he was the Outland Trophy Award winner, and we have certain expectations when you hear something like that. But at the same, and he is very physical as a run blocker, but he is sporadic as a pass blocker. He doesn't have the great length, the great quickness that you're expecting as a left tackle. Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, again, doesn't have great length. I mean, he came in with 33¾-inch arms. That's pretty short for a left tackle. He has terrific feet, but only 1 year as a starter at the FBS level. I mean, that's scary. He's coming off the torn labrum, so there's some medical issues there. And then Garrett Bowles is probably the tackle I'm the most excited about athletically speaking. But again, we're talking about a 1 year starter at Utah. He was playing next to Isaac Asiata, the Morris Trophy Award winner, as the best offensive lineman in the entire Pac-12. So,
and he's 25 years old, by the way.
Exactly. So how do you invest a first round pick in a player who arguably wasn't the best offensive lineman on his own team? So that's, I would agree with you. I think that the offensive tackle position this year is a scary one.
Yeah, and that's something the Giants will have to figure out when they get to 23. It's a need. Is one of those, or one of those guys going to make sense for them with all these other positions? You talked about the strength. We mentioned tight ends already. D end, cornerback. Where do you think the Giants will find value in those two groups when they're at 23? Do you think they'll be able to get a day one starter? Whether or not they need a day one starter either group spot is a different question. But talent-wise, could they find a guy that is a good enough player to be a day one spot, or if they need them to be, at that spot of 23 to either D-end or corner?
No question about it. I mean, that's as I mentioned before, those are two of the absolute strengths in this draft class. And so because of that, I think the Giants are going to be able to take the best player available at defensive end or cornerback, and I feel very confident that it will be among the elite players still on the board. And so you are filling an area of concern. You are filling it with a best player available. And just to kind of go through some of the names, I mean, like a Taco Charlton from Michigan is a terrific player. Carl Lawson from Auburn. Charles Harris from Missouri. I mean, all three of those players I think are going to go right around where the Giants select as far as edge rushers. And they're very different guys. I mean, with Carl Lawson, talking about a kid who's going to be 6'2", 250, but he's so strong and he's so quick. Whereas Charles Harris is, you know, maybe an inch or two taller. Also has the quickness, but hasn't been quite as productive, quite as consistently as Carl Lawson does, but doesn't have the injury concerns. Taco Charlton might have the highest upside of any edge rusher in this class that's not named Myles Garrett. But because he only did it for 1 year as a full-time starter at Michigan, then he has some questions. So especially at edge rusher, I think that the Giants have a lot of options. And among the cornerbacks, you know, there's a laundry list of guys. I mean, Marlon Humphrey is a player from Alabama who I think fits in well with what New York likes to do because of his length, because of his straight line speed. So he is a guy that I'm excited about. Sidney Jones from Washington. I mean, no one threw a touchdown on him all season long. I mean, in the past happy Pac-12, that's saying something.
That is saying
you
something.
You know, so those are two guys that everybody's talking about, the Tease Tabers and the, you know, players like that. Humphrey and Sidney Jones are two of the guys who I think are absolute first-round picks that not a lot of people are high enough on.
You know, I'm going to go to a different position on defense for a second because they haven't taken a linebacker in the first round since Curl Banks. And I got to think that string continues. I don't know. From your perspective, would that be a wise thing to do?
to me, there's only two linebackers in this draft class that are that warrant first-round consideration. I would say Alabama's Reuben Foster and Vanderbilt's Zach Cunningham. Reuben Foster is more that kind of a run plugger in the middle, you know, very, very physical, has the athletic ability to be able to drop back into coverage and do in the blitz as
He'll
well.
Be long gone by 23.
I think he will. There's some medical issues with him that I think could scare some people off.
Was he shoulder problems, Foster?
Yeah. And he's had, I mean, shoulder problems, knee issues. He had a concussion earlier. But there are things that are a little bit of a concern. Certainly in the combine environment, every injury is nitpicked. But he is a guy who he's a tough guy, and so when you practice and play as hard as they do at Alabama and play as many games, frankly, as they do at Alabama, those kind of things are going to pop up. Zach Cunningham might just be even more athletic, which is saying something because Foster is a freakish athlete. But he's really long arms, and it allows him to kind of lasso ball carriers that look like they're out of his grasp. And because of that fact, I think that he even has a little bit more positional versatility. He can line up inside in the middle linebacker position as well, go to the outside as well. And so I think that those are the two guys that would make the most sense. And if either one of them are on the board for the Giants, then I think that they would be among the best players available.
Last question for me. One fan wanted me to ask about another linebacker. I figure it's a good opportunity. You're talking about the position. Jared Davis, the linebacker. What are your thoughts on him? Where do you think he might land? What are his strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, he's a guy that a lot of people seem to be a little higher on than I am. I mean, there's an old saying in the NFL. It's kind of cold, but it's true that you can't make the club in the tub. And Jared Davis missed a lot of time throughout his career while at Florida. He does have terrific speed. He's going to be in that 6 foot, 240-pound range. So he's shorter.
He's a mic or an outside?
I think he's a Mike. I think he's athletic enough to play in the outside as well, but I just think that with that size, I want him to be able to come in, get underneath the guards and the centers, and be able to kind of set the stage at the point of attack right there. I mean, go up and get it, and he can do that. And again, he has the athletic ability to be able to play on the outside. At the same time, I don't know that he's the dynamic edge rusher. I think that some of that was Florida's aggressive scheme, putting him in positions to succeed. And again, the lack of durability is really my biggest concern with him. So I know that some people out there put him in the first round. He has those kind of traits. And certainly if there's only going to be two linebackers going in the first round, there's going to be some need there. I just think it's going to be kind of like that we talked about before, those teams that reach for the quarterbacks. I think a team that reaches for a linebacker in this draft class is going to give up the opportunity to select better edge rushers and defensive backs and ultimately possibly look foolish a couple of years down the road from now.
John, I'm going to go offense with my
Please.
Final question. Let's just say the Giants are looking for a power back to renew an earth, wind, and fire combination in their backfield. They're probably not going to take one real high in the first or second round because if you're going to have a guy who's a part-time player, you're going to take him in the third, fourth, or fifth round. That makes a lot of sense. All right, between the guys like P. Ryan and Foreman, maybe somebody else, who would you suggest they be looking at in that range?
Well, P. Ryan certainly, I mean, the strength that he showed yesterday, I mean, 30 repetitions, 225 pounds, that just speaks to his power. And we all saw what he did with Oklahoma. I mean, he is a terrific power back. And I think that would be, like you said, the earth, wind, and fire. I think that's exactly what you need to do with him is to complement him with a speed running back. But he can be that guy in between the tackles to be that bulldozer. But the power back that I'm most intrigued by in terms of just his toughness on and off the field is Pittsburgh's James Conner. And the fact that he came out.
You're the second person to tell us that, by the way.
Well, and it's not just because of the cancer survival. I mean, obviously, we're all rooting for him because of that. This is just a terrific football player, too. I don't know that he's going to run that well in terms of 40-yard dash, but he's got lighter feet than people give him credit for. I think he's going to wind up being a better NFL player than Deontay Foreman, who everybody loves because of all the statistics that he put up. But that was a one-year kind of splashy performance. In my opinion, James Conner is, other than Leonard Fournette, of course, is probably the best big back in this draft. Wow. And I think you might be able to find him in the middle rounds, and I feel very confident that he has not only the physical talent, but, of course, the mental toughness to be able to be successful at the NFL.
I'll certainly give you a chance to revise as we get closer to the draft, Rob. Give me a name at 23 for the Giants.
Name at 23 for the Giants right now. Actually, I've been kind of doing something a little bit different than everybody else. Everybody's going with, the edge rushers and the cornerbacks. I really think that addressing the running game has to be a concern for the Giants. And so I've been going with Christian McCaffrey. And I know that that's a pick that's going to surprise some people, and then they're maybe not going to like it. Maybe they will like it. I like it because I think that if you give Eli Manning another dynamic receiver, and that's the thing about Christian McCaffrey, is people ask all the time about, can he be a three-down back? I think he's a four-down back. I think that he is one of the few players that has the ability to not only impact the game as a runner, as a receiver, as a return man. I've been comparing him to Reggie Bush throughout his career. he's that type of a difference maker.
Wow.
And so I don't know that he's going to come in and be a 25 touch a game kind of a guy. As far as, I don't think he's going to get that many rushing attempts, but I think that he can significantly impact an offense's ability to run the ball, catch the ball out of the backfield, as well as in the return game, and that, to me, screams first-round pick.
Good Rob, stuff. Great stuff. We appreciate it always, my man. Thank
Thanks.
You so much.
Thank
Rob Rank, CBS Sports, Sports Exchange, joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. More coming your way from Indianapolis when we return.
Call me Chef Boy OD.
Not everybody get this opportunity, and you always want to show the outcome of the opportunity by giving back.
That's good.
Hey guys.
I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it. Some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids, that's what it's all about. I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
We're back here in Indianapolis on Giants.com at the NFL Combine. I'm sure you recognize this guy to our left. That's Ralph Vacchiano, formerly of the New York Daily News. Now he's the man with the plan for SNY, covering both teams in the New York local area, both the Giants and the Jets. Ralph, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. You're also doing a Giants podcast, correct?
I am indeed. We're going to have a new one hopefully up right before free agency starts, if not certainly during draft time. Do it once a week during the season. Have you guys on at some point?
Ah, we'd love to be with you. All right, Ralph. Me and Paul have kind of talked to people for the last few days. I know I've seen you around. You're doing the same thing. And the theme that we've been getting is that while everyone understands a big part of the Giants' offseason has to be improving the offensive line, it might prove a little bit more difficult than a lot of fans might want to hear.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of attractive options for improving the offensive line, either in free agency or the draft. Now, the draft evaluations are going to change wildly, as we all know, between now and draft day.
But no doubt.
Right now, you know, there's mixed reactions as to whether it's a good class or a deep class. But in free agency, you're talking about the better guys seem most suited to right tackle, which might not be what the Giants want. We don't know yet. They're also going to be wildly overpriced. I mean, you think, like, Brian Winters, the Jets guard, got, like, $7 million a year. If that's the starting salary spot for a guard who's good but not great, the tackle market's going to go crazy. Since you're looking at guys like Ryan Clady, who would be good, but he's getting older and he's injured. I mean, the word would be damaged goods, and I don't know that the Giants want to get into that market. And Andre Whitworth, who's what, 35 years old, so you know, maybe they can find a veteran, but you're not looking at like the savior of the offensive line or your left tackle for the next 10 years.
Well, John Mara's already said that last year they spent a lot of money on free agency and they don't have nearly as much to spend. So you know that their big splash is probably JPP
right,
with the tag. Can Hankins fit in here? Jerry Reese said there were ways to make the numbers still work. Can it happen, or is Hankins going to get a lot of offers?
I think he's going to get a lot of offers. I mean, it certainly can happen. You know, you've got to figure, even though Jonathan Hankins is not Damon Harrison, the contract might end up in that area because that's what happens in free agency. The cap keeps jumping wildly, so the numbers go crazy. Nobody thought last year that Olivier Vernon was going to get $85 million, and he did. So you could get into the Harrison range. There's ways to work that so it can fit. Even with JPP, the Giants have about $17 million or so in cap room. They may not be very active in free agency. There are ways to create more space. Mm-hmm. You know, Eli Manning can restructure his deal, or they can restructure it for him. So there's ways to do it. I think Hankins wants to come back, but you get that sense. You get this close to free agency, it's very tempting to find out what your market value is going to be, and he's going to be one of the best defensive tackles out there.
Yeah.
And, Ralph, when you take a look at it now, and like I said, you were with the Jets last year, too, covering them, and, of course, a lot of the rumors out there about Brandon Marshall. What are you hearing about that, first of all? And, of course, whenever somebody comes available, you know all the tweets everybody always gets.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to be fair, Brandon Marshall actually was officially released about a minute before I came on this
show. Is that
true? So, yeah, the Jets just announced it.
It's now done.
It is now official. So I haven't heard anything official, you know, about the Giants interested or somebody else interested. What I can tell you is I think it makes a lot of sense for the Giants because Eli Manning, Ernie Accorsi told me this. It's in his original scouting report. He told me this many years ago that the book on Eli Manning is that when he misses high. Mm-hmm. It's why they went out and got Plaxico Burress. It's why Eli Manning's best years were with Amani Toomer at 6'3 and Burress at 6'5. The Giants have not had that big receiver. I mean, they've got guys that played big, but, you know, Hakeem Nicks was not a huge guy. He was 6'1", maybe.
Had a good wingspan, though.
He did have a good wingspan. Odell Beckham plays big, but, you know, when I walked into the Jets locker room last year and saw Brandon Marshall, my first thought was, now that is an NFL receiver. He just looked so much more physically imposing. Not better, but more physically imposing than the guys in the Giants room.
You know what reminded me of, I think, Ralph, when we went to Cincinnati for training camp 2 years ago and you saw A.J. Green, and you're like, wow.
Right. Yeah. And I think that you get a guy like that on the outside. Granted, he's not at the prime of his career, but you can get him at a little bit of a bargain. You know, last year he had 100-something catches, 1,500 yards. He's not that far away from playing really good football. He likes New York. It makes some sense. I don't know that the Giants are going to do it, but it does football-wise, I think it makes sense to me.
From his perspective, though, he's a guy that's always been the 1A guy. He's been the star. Is he okay being a guy that's going to get half as many targets as he normally gets and not being the star attraction?
That's an interesting question. All I can tell you is that towards the end of last season with the Jets, when we had asked him, you know, would you be willing to stay here and take a pay cut, he gave his famous line of like, well, I'll play for free. My bills are paid. But in that quote, he also said, you know, it's not just about the money for me anymore. I want to win.
Yeah.
So maybe the same thing would be towards, well, I don't want to be the number one guy anymore. I want a chance to win. He's never been in a playoff game in 11 years. If you say to him, hey, come to an 11-5 team, we're loading up to win a championship in the next 3 years, you're not going to be the number one guy, but you'll get 60 catches. You're not playing for another contract. You're just playing to get your championship. I think you could sell him.
Especially in the red zone, he'd be a huge target
for
them. Absolutely.
Well, you know, that Giants wide receiver room is very young and impressionable. And right now, they don't have that, quote, old-timer veteran presence in the room. So do you think that is more of a necessity, that if they're going to add to that core, that it's not necessarily a draft pick because that's another newbie? Mm-hmm. Does it need to be an old-timer?
I don't think it needs to be an old-timer. You know, you can succeed with younger guys. You can have – there are veterans on the offense that can influence some of the younger receivers. Odell Beckham is a kid, but he's now been around a few years. He should know what it means to be an NFL player. But I think it does help when you have a guy like Brandon Marshall or a veteran player. You know, obviously there's been a lot of issues, some overblown, some not, with Odell Beckham. You know, he's still growing. He's still – people are trying to calm him down, teach him what it's like to be a professional. Brandon Marshall actually had contacted Odell Beckham last year, and they spoke when it looked like Beckham might be a little out of control again. He could be a mentor. He could be a guy who says, hey, these are the things you need to know. I dealt with this. I was a volatile kid who had to learn how to be famous, and I came through it. Here's how. So it certainly could help, but they could survive without that.
And I asked Bob Glauber this question. He was on about a half an hour ago. When the Giants try to figure out how to get this offense back to what it was a couple years ago, where do you think that solution's going to come in? How do you think is the most efficient way to fix it and make it more consistent?
Well, I believe strongly that it all comes down to the offensive line. I've been a big supporter of Eli Manning for his entire career. I think he is, while not the player he was 5 years ago, there aren't 10 guys in this league I would take over him. So you're set at quarterback. Odell Beckham's as good as you can be at receiver. Sterling Shepard is fine. You maybe get another guy. I think you can get by at running back, too, and Paul Perkins could be very good. But you need to have a group up front that can create those holes for the running backs and protect Eli Manning. And I heard what Ben McAdoo said the other day, where he didn't really blame Eli for everything, but he kind of said, you know, it's not just the offensive line. It's Eli's footwork, the turnovers, all those things. That's fine. But we all watch the games, and Eli Manning did not have the kind of time in the pocket that most other quarterbacks of good teams get. Mm-hmm. And there were plenty of games where he took two steps back, and there was a guy right in his face. You fix that offensive line and give him time, and I think that offense gets much closer to being in the top half of the league again.
Do they need to, A, have a fullback in their offense this year, and B, Coach McAdoo even said he would evaluate everything after his rookie season, which would include play calling.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, the fullback, I think it would help. I don't know if it's a big deal. They didn't use the fullback a ton when the last couple of times they had it. Now, I don't know how they were going to use Will Johnson before. Will Johnson, sorry. Drew blank there for a second. In his tight end, fullback, H-back role, that would have been interesting to see. But in principle, having another blocker, whether he's a fullback, a true blocking tight end, would absolutely help. So I think they should do that. As for the play calling, it's kind of interesting. I did sense at times maybe Ben McAdoo lost a little bit of the big picture of the game because he was trying to call plays. I didn't think that was a major, major issue. And I know some of it, there's a lot of criticism about his play calling, and sometimes there were certainly some decisions he made that were really strange to me. But I think in general, he called plays that would have worked. I mean, you can't – he called – were there two times in the end zone that in that Green Bay game that a receiver dropped the ball? Another one, Odell Beckham drops another one that's a big third down. These are plays that are working but not being executed.
Another one too, Ralph, the ball that came out of Eli Manning's hand. Roger Lewis is wide open in the end zone for the touchdown if it doesn't slip out of Eli Manning's hand.
Absolutely, and there's plenty of examples like that. Even runs, people say, "Why could you, how could you run there?" And then you look at the film and you see the tight end whiffing on somebody and the running back hit before he gets to the line of scrimmage.
You're right.
Is it a bad play? Okay, well, maybe he should know his personnel and know that, you know, Larry Donnell or whoever wasn't going to pick up that block. But at some point, you got to try it and expect a guy to get his assignment. But the execution on offense this year, in a lot of cases, was just terrible. So I don't know that the play calling change would make that big a difference. I think Mike Sullivan could have called a great game, and the execution would have been just as bad.
Right.
How about the draft, Ralph? What do you think the approach is going to be? You mentioned the offensive line class. Everyone we've had on is very nonplussed about it. You know, there probably isn't going to be someone there worthy at 23 to pick when the Giants get there. So are they going to try to build on a strength here? Such a good defensive draft in the defensive backfield, defensive line? Or do they try to maybe address the linebacker or a tight end position in the first round for the first time in a while? How do you see them approaching this draft in general?
You know, it's funny. For years, Jerry Reese and Ernie Corsi before him and probably George Young before him always said, we just take the best player available. And I've written and laughed about this publicly because it usually matches a need somehow. A need factors in when you're building your draft board. And especially in the first round, you always want a guy who can plug into a spot. But this year, I actually think the best player available might be the way to go because this is a good team. You know, we're talking about all their holes. They're 11-5. They could have beaten the Green Bay Packers. They could have made a little bit of a run at the Super Bowl. And their offense, in my opinion, badly underachieved. So, yeah, they have holes. If there's an offensive lineman that they like there, I'd like to see them work on offense because they spent $200 million on defense. Mm-hmm. I think they're fine there, even if Jonathan Hankins doesn't come back. If there's an offensive lineman there, great. If O.J. Howard or David Njoku at tight end somehow slip there, you need a dynamic tight end. I think they want a dynamic tight end. So they're going to have options. And honestly, if there is a defensive player, a good pass rushing linebacker, a replacement at defensive tackle for Jonathan Hankins, those are things you have to consider. Even a defensive end wouldn't be ridiculous because they really just have two, and they like more of a rotation. I mean, they have guys that, like Romeo Okwara, maybe could be something, but only two proven guys.
And those guys made way too many snaps last year, too, by the way, when they were active.
Absolutely. So they have a lot of options to go where they could get a position that would help them. So it might. This goes against my philosophy, but it might come down to best player available.
And by the way, you never know what happens with Jason Pierre-Paul next year if he happens to play on the franchise tag.
Right.
You draft a really good pass rusher. That gives you a lot more freedom next year if he ends up becoming a free agent for a second straight year.
Absolutely. You do have to think about that. And I don't One thing I do believe is I don't know that you should think too long term with your first round pick. I don't know what position this would be, but you don't want to. Like, I wouldn't take a quarterback there now and say, okay, well, in 3 years he's going to replace Eli Manning. This draft is about, and this free agency class is about this. You got 3 years left of Eli Manning. Maybe a little more, but let's figure 3 years. You're trying to win a championship in those 3 years. Everything you do is about that. So you got to be careful about saying, well, in 2 years, this guy's contract is up, then we can slide. No, you need help right now. JPP's different because it's, at the moment, a one-year contract. But you need a guy that's going to be somewhat of an immediate help so you can try to maximize your last few years with Eli.
John, I know you want to get to some calls here. I'm going to ask you a real quick one before you get to those phones. Two guys who we don't know a whole lot about, but we think the Giants are going to ask a lot of, Darian Thompson.
mm-hmm. at safety, and B.J. Goodson at linebacker, who's expected to at least compete for a starting job. What's your gut feel as to what they're going to get out of those two guys?
Well, I think Darian Thompson will end up as a starter. I mean, that obviously was their intention last year before he got hurt. There was nothing that any of us saw in camp or his little bit of time playing that said he couldn't handle it.
He looks good.
He looks really good.
Heck, by May, he had outplayed two veterans that were on the team for two or 3 years.
Absolutely. B.J. Goodson is a little bit more of a mystery to us just because we didn't see as much, but everything I hear out of the Giants is they really think, you know, this kid was a steal for where they drafted him, and I think he will get a legitimate chance to win a starting job. I mean, both of those guys could step in.
You mind taking a couple calls with us, Ralph?
No, absolutely. Go ahead.
Charlie in Portland, Maine has requested to talk to Ralph specifically.
Wow. Oh, no,
so
that could be bad.
No,
you better
trust
talk.
Me. It's not good. Charlie, what's up, pal?
Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Ralph. Hey, cousin. How are you doing?
What's going on?
His last name's also Vacchiano, by the way.
Oh, okay. There you go. Now I get it. All right. How you doing, Charlie?
Hey, I'm coming down to New York. Can I stay on your couch for about a week?
Let me. I'll message you my address. Yeah, no problem.
Next up, he's going to ask you for a couple of bucks too.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm a sports writer and broadcaster. There aren't a couple of bucks to give you, so.
Hey, no, I got a good question for you. It looks like, you know, I've been seeing different reports that, you know, we got JPP under the tag, and I'm hearing that they're not going to try to sign him long term. They just want him for a year, and they're going to replace him and find some speed rusher in the draft. And then I hear other things like they're really trying to work on a long-term deal. What's your take on that? What do you think they're going to do? And also, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and the answer to that, I think I'm taking John Mara at his word. He said to Newsday the other day that he wants to sign Jason Pierre-Paul to a long-term deal. I had I haven't actually seen the reports. I heard the report that said they weren't going to do it, and then they were going to let him go and go somewhere else. But
I didn't see that one, to be honest with you.
It wouldn't even make sense to me because, again, everything they're doing is about this three-year window.
Right,
so
right.
Why spend $17 million on Jason Pierre-Paul now, knowing he'll be gone next year, and assuming he'll be gone next year, you're going to need him next year too. So I think I don't know that they're going to sign him long-term, but I think they're definitely going to try.
What was your second point, Charlie?
Yeah, the other point was the offensive line. How can we proceed forward and have a better team if we don't fix this offensive line? There's got to be. We have to get a left tackle somehow, some way. And who's the best guy out there besides Wentworth, which we're probably not going to go after, but somebody who could upgrade the line, not spend a ton of money since, you know, we tagged JPP and now we have hardly any cap space left. Who's the best guy? Is it Okun? Is it Beecham? Is it – who do you think, Ralph?
It's a really good question. I think you're going to look at, I think, the Ryan Clades and Russell Okung, guys you can get on a relatively short-term deal. I think Kelvin Beecham is going to end up being too expensive, but you never know. They might make the call on him. That would be my guess that those guys are the guys they would at least kind of look at if they even decide to go in free agency. What they do on the line is going to be really interesting, though, because there is this – well, Jerry Reese left the door open to Eric Flowers moving to another position.
Right.
One thing about that is if you assume that Eric Flowers is a bad tackle, moving him to the right side is not going to make him a good tackle. It's going to make him a bad tackle on the other side of the line. I don't know how that magically changes the formula. Eric Flowers is also 22 still.
He's a baby.
Yeah, he – granted, he was not good last year. I don't think there's any evaluation that says he was good, but there is a lot of room for him to still grow. Now, they might want to move him to the right side because they're going to bring in a veteran who wants to play the left side. Last year, Russell Okung, Donald Penn, guys they flirted with, all wanted to play on the left side, and all were told, no, we're set with Eric Flowers. I do think the Giants need to be open to the idea of, at least temporarily, we'll move Eric so we can get a left tackle in here. That's the big decision that's kind of hanging over them, and I do think they need a veteran just to solidify things, and even for depth. I mean, you know, a guy like – I don't think they should bring back Marshall Newhouse, but a guy like him, a second-tier type of free agent veteran who can play right tackle or left if they need to and just make it a more professional line than it was.
I want to follow up because we've had a million guests on, and I haven't asked this question to anybody yet. Mm-hmm. How about right guard? John Jerry's a free agent.
Yep.
Do you think – he's a guy that they'll want to bring back? Is Bobby Hart, you think, a guy that's really well-positioned to move inside and be the starting guard? How do you think they approach the right guard spot?
You know, I thought Bobby Hart was okay. I think the Giants also think he was okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they see a future star there. I don't know that's, you know, what his role is going to be. But he could play there. He could play right tackle as well. I think they're interested in bringing John Jerry back at the right price. He wasn't awful last year. I mean, the whole line was bad. But, you know, when you look at the market for guards, you're talking, again, a bunch of overpriced guys that I don't necessarily think you, with your cap issues, you're going to want to spend at that position. Or you're going to look at a lot of guys that are going to look a lot like John Jerry. So, you know, he knows the system. He knows the team. They like him. I could see them bringing him back on a one-year deal.
I got one more call for Ralph, Paul. I want to get him before we say goodbye. Let's go to Chris in Virginia Beach. Chris, what's up, pal? Go ahead, Chris.
Hello.
Hello, Chris.
Chris, you with us, pal? Chris going once, Chris going twice, and Chris dropped. Okay, so we don't have a call.
Oh, we're sorry.
Paul, you want to give you one more wrap-up question here for Ralph?
Yeah, you know, I was finally going to say, bottom line is here, Ralph, the way it looks to me, if it's not free agency, which I don't think they can fill really too many of their holes given the money that they have,
right.
It does look like the Giants can solidify most of their weak spots in the draft. I think it's a good year for their needs to fit the marketplace, which you haven't always been able to say the last few years with this team.
Right. Absolutely. And free agency, and John Mara in that Newsday interview did say we don't expect to be very active in free agency. Realistically, unless they restructure other contracts, they've got that $17 million. I think they're going to at least try to re-sign Jonathan Hankins. That might be a third of that space. You have draft picks, and then you've got, you know, the little charges, a backup quarterback, a kicker, depth players. That
right.
is going to eat up $9 to $10 million before it's all done just to fill the roster.
How about kicker, by the way? What do you think they're going to do with kicker?
I thought they were fine with Robbie Gould. I haven't heard anything. You know, those are one of those things that you're not going to see activity. I mean, maybe they'll re-sign it before it starts, but usually you don't see activity on those guys until April because they're not the high priority free agents. So there hasn't been a lot on that, but I don't see why they wouldn't bring him back. But all those are little expenses. So there won't be big players in free agency unless something strange happens. But you're right about the draft. I mean, where they're drafting down in the first round, for example, you wouldn't take a tackle at 6 or 10 or one, but at 23,
exactly.
You might want to do that. The tight ends, if they were up in the top 10, O.J. Howard's probably not a top 10 guy. He might not get to 23, but he could be in that range. It could be range for them to jump up a little bit. So in the first and the second rounds, you're going to see a lot of players. There's always a lot of good second-round receivers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You will see a lot of players that will fit, and it might allow them to do some things like, you know, if you draft a tackle in the second round, well, okay, maybe you bring in Ryan Clady for a year on a low-budget thing. Or you draft a receiver. Maybe you bring in a Brandon Marshall. You can get those cheap veterans to sort of hold the fort until your rookies are ready to step in, and that might be the perfect marriage because there's no rebuilding here. They're good. They're 11 wins. There's no reason to think that they won't be an 11-win team next year. They just want to strengthen it a little bit so they can get over that first-round playoff hump.
And we allow you the right to change your mind. Give me a prediction at 23 for the Giants.
You know, I had been leaning towards offensive tackle. I don't necessarily – I think that the tight ends, especially if O.J. Howard and David Njoku are as athletic as people say – they're going to end up...
And we'll find out later on today and tomorrow about that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are going to get excited about them. And tight ends become such a weapon in this league, and everybody needs it, that if those guys are proved to be first-round talents, they're going to move up. I think there's going to be a good group of tackles. You're looking at Garrett Bowles. You're looking at Cam Robinson, Ryan Ramczyk. Three guys that are not loved by scouts, but are pretty good. I mean, they're generally thought of as first rounders. They might be sitting there. I think that, you know, when you look at it, you could see them taking a tackle at that spot. But if the tight ends are sitting there with their gaping hole at tight end with the chance to give Eli Manning that big dynamic target, I would have a hard time passing on one of those two guys.
It is funny, though. I will say this, John, and Ralph said it a minute ago. This is one of those years you actually aren't disappointed about picking lower in the draft.
Yeah.
Because if you were picking 7, 8, or 9, you'd be saying to yourself, well, I'm not sure if we're reaching here for some of these guys, and it would be a problem.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the Jets are gonna run into this up at 6.
I agree.
Yeah, they are, you know, there may be a couple of guys at the top of the draft they're going to love they're not going to be able to get. And then they're going to be with a group of guys that they're going to look at and go, well, geez, these are really more like 10 to 15
yeah,
picks, and
right.
what am I going to do
value's
here?
The value's not quite there.
Yeah, for the Giants, you sit there, you wait, you see what the group is, and you say, okay, hey, you know what? Nobody's taking a tackle yet. I'm going to take my top tackle on the board.
And yet we circle back to best player available. How about that?
Exactly. after a decade and a half of saying Jerry Reese does not draft best player available, finally he's going to do it, and I'll stand up and applaud it.
All right, there we go. Ralph Vacchiano, SNY, thank you for joining us.
My
we'll
pleasure.
Have more from the Combine in Indianapolis when we return right after this.
Growing up, there was guys that were willing to give back a little bit and talk to young kids, so I want to be that same person.
I just encourage you to strive for the best and just keep staying active. Thank you again.
I have such a passion for kids because I know the influence I could have on them, and any opportunity I have to give back, to interact with the youth and with people all around is a great opportunity.
That was a good play. Good work, man. Ha.
I feel like we are setting the example for the next generation. It's important for us as football players to recognize that we are in the public eye, grab that responsibility by the horn, and put ourselves out there and set a great example for the next generation.
We're back here in Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, Big Blue Kickoff Live, our final of 3 2-hour shows. And we're joined by our next guest, John Ledyard. You've heard him a bunch on our show from Inside the Pylon, covers the NFL Draft. John, good to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great. This is my first time down here at the Combine, and it's been a great experience so far. I've been to the Senior Bowl twice and loved that and was curious to see what this would be like because it's different. There's not that playing football aspect of it, which I'm very fond of as an evaluator, but this is fun, man. This is really good time to, you know, talk to the prospects, get to know them a little bit, but also see how those athletic scores and how their athletic testing matches up with the tape that you spent so much time studying. So for me, it's just a big thrill to see that firsthand.
Let me ask you about two or three guys, okay? I want you to give me some names that you saw during the Senior Bowl practices that maybe not everybody has on the tip of their tongues that you said, you know what? I'm really interested to see what happens when they get to the Combine.
Yeah, I think Derek Rivers from Youngstown State is one of those guys that I think is going to do really, really well here and surprise people. A defensive end, 3-4 outside linebacker type. But when I watched him on tape, I said, this guy's he's listed at 6'4". No way he's 6'4". And I thought he was like 6'2". And he measures in. He's 6'4". And I think I was deceived because he plays that low and leveraged all the time.
Wow. You know,
just a powerful guy at the point of attack. But when you're playing that low and leveraged, man, it means you're bending in all the right places. You have all that lower body flexibility. That means you can convert speed to power at a higher rate coming out of your stance. That means that you can do things like bend the edge and play those speed counter games on the outside. For a pass rusher, man, that's everything. So he does that not only as a pass rusher, also as a run defender. Those guys are playing under Bo Pelini. Those guys are playing in a good system.
Right.
They're getting good coaching, and he and his running mate Avery Moss, the other defensive end there, both of them show really good technique, hand placement, power coming out of their stances at the point of attack against the run. Like both of those guys, but really like Rivers. Think after this weekend, he'll work his way into that second round conversation. Obi Melifonwu, the safety from UConn, really impressive Senior Bowl. I think that's carried over as people have watched and studied his tape
more. You're the second guy that's mentioned him, by the way.
Yeah, because I think he's – I kind of went in. There's a Senior Bowl hype, and he's big, and he looks good when he gets out on the stage. And you kind of think, okay, I'm going to put on the tape, and he's not going to match up quite as much. Then I put on the tape, and I was really impressed. So I went in actually – you try and stay away from bias as much as you can. I went in actually thinking that he'd be worse, and then I put on the tape, and I thought – this guy's really impressive. He can tackle extremely well. Moving forward, attacks things really well. Great angles, wraps up, hitting power. I think he's going to be great against the run. I think he can step in and play that big slot role against tight ends and the Larry Fitzgerald bigger receiver types. The teams are starting to move into the slot. So he's a mismatch guy. He takes away your mismatches, and I think he gives you a real weapon on defense.
There's another guy I want to ask him about, John. It's a guy that John and I are familiar with at the FCS level. Guy wound up playing in the NFLPA, then in the Senior Bowl. Had four picks and then a forced fumble, and that would be Lorenzo Jerome, yeah. The safety out of St. Francis.
He actually, St. Francis is about 45 minutes from where I live, so he's very close to me.
And you know him.
Very close to me. Yes, I know him, and he's a great kid. I think he's very dedicated to film work in the game. If you watch Lorenzo Jerome's tape, you will see a safety unlike anybody else in this class. Very unique player. Almost runs around and freelances and baits quarterbacks and interceptions.
He does not do that. You're right.
It's really crazy. He's a very unique, and maybe they just said, you know what, you're more talented than everybody else, we're going to cut you loose. And so there's some concerns with will that project to the NFL as well. But I think with him, what's very interesting is that there's clear ball skills, some of the best instincts in the class. He's not going to go high, and I don't think he'll test off the charts there. But I think his agility drills, his short air quickness, very good. I was also blown away by him as a return man. I mean, very talented return man without having crazy elite athletic tools. Just he's almost like a running back when he has the ball in his hands. Really good vision in the open field. So I bet he goes day three, but I bet he starts for a team sooner than later, especially if you can get him in like a robber role, an underneath strong safety type. He'll come up and pop you against the run too. You know, there's some angles and some wrapping up things, and I think he'll get beat a time or two because he likes to take his chances, but the guy has great instincts, and I think he can really go get the ball in the air. He's going to turn people over. Those interceptions, not a misnomer, I think, that where they were for Jerod Holloman, if you remember from Louisville a couple years ago, couldn't tackle him. He used these 14 picks. That's so exciting. You watched on tape, half of them were like tip balls and just ones that landed in his lap. That's not what you see with Jerome. I think he had 18 picks during his time at St. Francis. Those are legit picks.
I want to go deeper on the safety class. It's one class that you really haven't talked much about this weekend because the Giants had Darian Thompson last year. Looked like he was going to be the starter. They have Landon Collins. If Thompson's back healthy, they have their starters. But people have said this is an extremely deep safety class, one of the best you'll see. Who are some of the safeties you think guys aren't talking about enough that could go between rounds 3 and 5, let's say, that can come in and be a factor in the NFL, primarily in the coverage role? Because I really think that's what you need now in the safety position in the NFL. You need guys that can run with the tight end, can play guys up the seam, can play that single high, get sideline to sideline.
Well, Jerome's one for sure. I think Marcus Williams from Utah is interesting, and I'm really just curious to see what he tests here because I like him on tape a good bit, and he plays like a single high role, and he can give you some of that back-end coverage I think that you want, some of that range on the back end. But I wonder how athletic he is sideline to sideline. How explosive is he? He seems kind of like a one-speed guy at times, and I don't know. I haven't seen enough yet to know how much he'll give you in the run game too. But in terms of coverage on the back end, I think he fits really well. Tedrick Thompson from Colorado is really interesting because you have the separation of the two aspects of playing safety, the two general aspects, run defense and coverage. And when you break those down, coverage, range to play single high, ball skills to go make interceptions from single high, going to turn people over, a little bit like Jerome in that way, but also can step into the slot and is really quick and explosive short area, change of direction, and I think can mirror guys and play in the slot. Ask him to play in run support, though, and you're going to get a guy who ducks out of tackle opportunities. And, I mean, he comes up aggressive, and then the lineman's pulling for him, and he's out of there, man. And so he's making the business decisions in the run game a little bit. So if you can live with that, because he is aggressive when he has a chance to get somebody with a shot, and, you know, their back's turned, he's going to send a message. But so he is aggressive in some ways, and he's got legit ball skills. Some team is going to overlook the run game deficiencies and take him in that 3rd to 5 range, I think, because of how athletic he is and how much he gives you in coverage.
You know, more and more of these guys are coming out early. We know that. It's been now for several years, the trend about that. And in the NFL, because of the CBA, they're not doing a lot of hitting. There's not a lot of extra coaching going on during the offseason. And so how hard does that make it for a guy like you who goes to the Senior Bowl? You're trying to project guys, but the truth of the matter is you know they may not get the polish that they need to succeed at the next level, especially quickly.
I think one of the biggest things is making sure that they have the traits, and that's why something like the combine I think is so critical, because making sure they have the traits to make the jump. Okay, so especially when you're scouting smaller school guys, FCS level guys, other guys like that, they may look great on tape against that level of competition, and I may get really excited about it, but I always say I've got to see him at the combine because I want to see how does their testing compare to what I'm seeing on tape. Is it just because of that level of competition, or are they really on the same level athletically? Because I can see they can do it technically. I can see that they have refinement and polish, but I want to see what their athletic ceiling is. The other side of that is some of those guys will come here, blow it up here, and do really well at the combine, but you wonder about, like what you're saying, is about the technique and the refinement, the mental processing side of it. I think that's where the tape comes in. And when you're talking about DBs, that's where being able to see all 22 comes in, especially safeties and things like that. How do they see routes develop? Do they take false steps? Do they bite on play action one step, two steps, consistently? When do they recover? How quickly do they recover? It's okay to bite and lean forward. You can't get way out of position. You can't abandon your assignments. So knowing how to measure those things, I think, is critical too. But for coaches and for these teams and scouts, that is why the whiteboard sessions and the meetings are so important, because everybody's got weaknesses on tape. Mm-hmm. What these guys want to find out are, can I fix those weaknesses? Is the player coachable enough for me to fix those weaknesses? And is this player have the skill, the ability, the mental processing, the mental ability to be able to fix those weaknesses in time? I think that's something that teams and coaches, and they have inside info on, that sometimes as evaluators, that's what the part I miss out on. And
sure.
That's what I blame all my missed picks on over here.
John Ledyard inside the pylon. If you want to get in, well, okay, take a couple draft calls with them as well at 201-939-4513. Get on the lines. I'll try to squeeze in before you say goodbye in about 7 or 8 minutes. John, when you take a look at this draft class overall and you look at where the Giants pick at 23, where do you think the depth and talent match up well for the Giants when they're going to come on the clock in that first round? And I'll make it challenging. Second round, too.
Well, I think tight end is a position they've got to look pretty heavily at. To me, Eli Manning really helps him when he has a good tight end. I think early in his career he had good tight ends, and when he started playing his best, that was a big asset for him. And I think that if they can bring that back again, get a game changer at the tight end position, I think that's critical for these guys. You know, I think that getting somebody like that could match up in the first round. It could be an asset, a position that they look at. You hope that David Njoku doesn't run in the 4.3s maybe this weekend because he's going to be gone if he does. Maybe you hope he's a low 5.45s guy, and, you know, you don't want him to be so bad that you diminish him on your board, but you don't want him to be so
give
good.
Give him some extra bread at lunch. That'll
exactly,
take care of it.
Right. So maybe slip something to him. Give him a little of that water weight. But, yeah, I think that that's going to be key, I think, because so, you know, guys like him and O.J. Howard, teams are going to be tempted because it's not a deep wide receiver class. And those guys, they're tight ends, sure, but they're offensive weapons. And so when teams are going to want to get their hands on those guys earlier than not, because the wide receiver class is solid, but there's only a couple of those number one types. These guys can be number one type passing attack options in your offense. So I think that's going to be big for those guys. That could match up with them, or they could slide their way out of the board. I'm trying to think about the Giants' needs, but I think that offensive tackles may slide a little bit more in this class because it isn't an elite. There's a top 10 caliber guy maybe in this class, and also because other positions of importance like edge rusher and quarterback and defensive back are very, very talented. So those guys may go a little bit earlier. Offensive tackles may slide a little bit. Right after the Giants, I think there's a run of teams that would be interested in tackle. They kind of start that area a little bit unless somebody's reaching ahead of them maybe for a position. But I think they kind of start that. So they may have their pick of the litter of some pretty good tackle options in the class, which could be of benefit to them. Garrett Bowles is here. Loved what he had to say the other day when he was at the podium. Cam Robinson's working out today and looked really good in the drills so far. You know, both of those guys could be really good options for them on the offensive line, and they'd certainly need the tackle help, I think.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about when I came out here and trying to address the Giants' needs, trying to look at not necessarily the first-round pick, but as John said, second-round pick, third-round pick, fourth round. We talked a lot with the guys who have been in this chair about running back. Giants need to get another power back. Giants could maybe use another pass rusher to increase the depth at defensive end. These may not be first-round areas that they look to, but are there guys in those, again, second, third, fourth round at those spots? I think that's more to what maybe John was trying to get to, right?
Yeah, and I think that I didn't answer that part of your question, John. I'm sorry. But that second-round aspect's important. First, let me say something that's going to get Giants fans crazy for a little bit. Leonard Fournette jumped 28.5 inches in the vertical, which is poor. Even for his size, that's poor. So let's say he doesn't run as fast in the 40.
He's not going to 23. Are you kidding
me? Let's
get
the speculation going.
Are you kidding me?
You know, Paul, I'll tell you what, though. I've heard a lot of people mimic what John just said right there. Not that he's going to maybe drop to 23, but I will guarantee when all is said and done,
yeah,
I bet you Dalvin Cook goes ahead of him in this draft.
I wouldn't be surprised either. Yeah, I think Dalvin Cook does. The reason I mainly think Fournette could fall, and it wouldn't be shocking to me, and 23 may be a little bit far, but the main reason I think is because the running back position consistently doesn't get valued as highly as we think it should maybe in a vacuum. And so maybe that happens. Is he Ezekiel Elliott's level as a running back? Does Ezekiel Elliott going in the top five and then leading the NFL in rushing, does that change things for the way teams evaluate rushing?
Do you think Fournette's in Elliott's category?
I don't. I think he's a very good player with a very high floor, and I think that needs to be valued appropriately. And so I don't want to come off as being anti-Leonard Fournette. I don't think he's a generational-type running back prospect.
Okay.
And I think Dalvin Cook is better. And I think Joe Mixon's better on tape, but I obviously wouldn't take him or wouldn't draft him. So, anyway, just to say that Fournette, if he fell, there could be an enticing option. Maybe not at 23. Maybe you think about trading up if you think he's that generational-type of talent. Again, I'm not advocating that. Just trying to get the speculation stirring and everything.
He knows good radio when he hears it. That's for sure.
The second round, I think Alvin Kamara from Tennessee could be a really good option for the Giants. Could be a possibility. He jumped, I think, 39.5 inches.
Oh, wow. That's really good.
So, yeah, very explosive kid. Is he going to be an every down presence? I think that'll be one of the big questions, I think. Is he, because he never had that feature role at Tennessee. A good player, but was kind of always used more as a pass catching option until Jalen Hurd decided to move on. Then he moved in and he flashed really strong. So he could be an option. Jamal Williams from BYU, player I love. I'm
heard a lot about him.
Yeah.
Heard a lot
very
about
talented
him.
Kid. I don't think he's going to blow it up here. But if you put on the tape, very good instincts and sense of where openings are and space are and how to work to them efficiently.
Downhill runner too,
yeah.
Right?
Downhill runner, physical, good vision at the second level, I think, once he gets in. Vision at the first level can use improvement. He was off football for like 2 years. Came back and was lighting it up this season. I mean, right. Phenomenal season. So he, Kareem Hunt from Toledo. There's going to be good backs throughout this draft. The Giants will be wise, I think, to go in another direction, unless Fournette falls, then another direction in the first round, I think, and then address that position later on, because there's going to be good depth in this class. You're going to be able to get starters, I think, in the second.
John, we got to get to our next guest. Mm-hmm. Give me a quick prediction for the Giants at 23, and I will let you reserve the right to change it when we have you on closer to the draft.
Yes. Right now I'm going to go David Njoku. I know that's a popular pick to them. I tend to stay away from the popular picks, but to me, the Giants get somebody like that in that offense with OBJ, and I'm a huge Sterling Shepard fan. I could be a game changer for them.
Thanks, John. Great stuff. Yep. Inside the Pylon covers the NFL draft.
Thanks, guys.
Plenty more coming up from the combine. Our final guest, Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, is our cleanup hitter right here on Giants.com. He joins us next. Stay with us.
Hey, guys.
You guys can say hi.
I've always been one to try to take the platform that we're on and help give back to people that need it.
I can read in bed and in purple.
Luckily, I got both of my parents in my life, and they've always been there. But some of these kids, they might not have neither parent in their life. And if I can help those type of kids and those type of people by giving them some words, giving them some knowledge, giving them some love, give them a hug, that's what it's all about.
The golden rule is treat others how you want to be treated. Respect people, show respect, listen to people, and treat them kindly.
I want to see these kids progress forward in life. I want to see these kids the following year better than they was the year before. It's something that I really believe in, and it's something that I feel like the platform that we have, that it's almost an obligation.
We're back here at Indianapolis at the Combine for the National Football League. We've had about 18 guests over the last 3 days, and we saved our best for last. That's Matt Miller from Bleacher Report. You see the jacket. He does a great job covering the NFL draft. Matt, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the compliment. More so, this was just the only time I could get in here. There was no best for last. I know the truth. Yeah. You guys have had a great guest. I saw your Twitter account, man. You guys are getting like the best of the best with the draft world. So
we're doing our best awesome. Here, and I think it's perfect because we just had John come on, and he's – I feel like there's like two halves of the Leonard Fournette crowd. You have the some people that are like down in athleticism, and they worry about him. And I don't know, you're on the opposite end of the spectrum, right?
Love the
you
kid.
Love Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, love the
so
kid.
Tell Giant fans why Leonard Fournette is a generational running back.
I know everybody's going to point to the vertical jump. I don't need to see him jump over people because I've seen him run over them and through them. Like, let him run through the wall at the combine. He'll do that all day. Listen,
they don't have that test yet.
Right, yet. Yeah, they should for certain guys. I think we get too caught up in the combine and the testing numbers, and you know, it's always more about the actual film, and I think Leonard Fournette is a great running back with, he doesn't have the best vision, but he's able to create holes with his power, with his speed, his acceleration, what he does down the field. You see a guy who doesn't decelerate. Like, he does 30 yards, 40 yards, he's still going strong. You could watch him, you know, that running against Auburn, where he's, like, carrying guys on his back. Like, he brings that to the table. So, I know Giants fans want him there at 23, and John is giving you guys some false hope. But
false being the opportune word
there.
He's
going to be a top 6 or 7 pick, and that's if there's a run on quarterbacks, you know. So, he is truly – I feel like Myles Garrett and Leonard Fournette are both generational talents, and – at this time of year, like a good way to get noticed is to say those guys aren't good. Let me tell you, they're really good.
I want to go back to what you just said a second ago about the quarterbacks, because everybody seems to have those 3 or 4 guys high up top. Where do you really believe they are going to land in the first round, and will they push people down, or are we going to get to draft day and suddenly say, wow, these guys are all falling like that ESPN stone that they usually have when the camera's in the living room and they're dropping guys?
Yeah. No, I think they're going to go early. A couple of them will. And it happens every year. Like, it's like, you know, when you don't have a date to prom and you start to get close to that dance and you start, well, who's the prettiest girl that does have a date? That's what the draft is with quarterbacks. You're just waiting. Okay, who's the prettiest girl? Because we got to get one.
And there are some desperate teams.
And there are. And I've already had texts today. Like, man, DeShone Kizer interviews well. He's impressive. I'm like, yo, you guys were trashing him 2 weeks ago, you know? And so it's like, you will. The tide will start to turn. It's so predictable, you know? Mel Kiper's going to be on TV in a couple weeks talking about, you know, these quarterbacks are rising. And you know, the rest of us draft guys are going to be. We're going to fall to the same trap, but they might not belong as top five picks, but they're going to go early because of the needs. You know, Cleveland needs one, San Francisco needs one, Chicago needs one, Jacksonville needs one, the Jets need one. Like, the Titans could trade out of five. The Texans, you know, the Broncos, there's so many teams that need quarterbacks that they're, because of the import of that position, they're going to go early.
And you can thank the Browns for that. Someone over there was leaking about Trubisky, maybe picking him over Myles Garrett, things like that, which I think is a little bonkers.
I think there are a lot of teams hoping or praying that happens so that they can get Myles Garrett.
Yeah, the San Francisco 49ers being the first on that list.
John Lynch is probably starting that rumor, just hoping that it'll catch on, yeah.
How about where the Giants pick at 23? Are you under the same impression as most others that when the Giants get there at 23, the best players on the board will probably be either at corner or defensive end based on this draft class, or maybe even a tight end if either Howard or Njoku fall that spot?
Yeah, I think that's a great look, especially, like, let's go with the premise that the quarterback's going to go early. That's going to push someone down. So this corner class is so deep, like six or seven deep in the first round. So you could get a quality player there. You know, the tight end position with Howard and Njoku, I think they're top 15 players, but because of the nature of the position, they might fall a little bit.
What chance do you think there is that both those guys are off the board inside the first 20 picks?
I would say a high chance, like 75%.
Wow,
probably,
okay.
Just because they're freak athletes. And it's not a good receiver class, right? So we have Mike Williams and Corey Davis, excuse me. So they're going to go pretty early. But then those other teams that need help in the passing game, like, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, they need another pass catcher. It wouldn't surprise me if they say, okay, we don't love these receivers. Let's go get a tight end.
And isn't it funny? Because usually in the draft, when you start talking about guys who are moving up and creeping into that first round or just going high in the first round, it's usually the receivers. This year, it's the tight ends everybody's getting all excited about.
Yeah, because they run like receivers. They look like receivers. You know, O.J. Howard is. And what's crazy about both of these guys is they're really good blockers, too. So they are true three-down players. They fit in this, you know, pro-style offense. You could put them in line. You could put them in the backfield. You could flex them out. They can really do everything for you because of their athleticism.
So maybe even the first round, you have a couple positions you like in the late 20s. What positions do you think start to maybe rise to the top of the crop in, say, the second, third, and fourth rounds? Or maybe there's, you know, those high-end guys, but you get to the middle rounds, you're going to find some values there and some guys that can contribute.
That's where I like the receiver value. It's in the second round where guys like Cooper Kupp and Zay Jones, and you start to see some of that value. You know, Chris Godwin from Penn State, of guys who could definitely, you know, get in there and you know, maybe they have a flaw that keeps them out of round one, but they're still really good players. And it's funny because when I make lists or mock drafts, it's like there are 40 guys I want to put a first-round grade on this year because there's so many good players. So we're going to see a lot of talent. The safety position's deep. I think there could be a ton of value there in round two. You know, a guy like Jabril Peppers, he could be there in round two. Buda Baker from Washington could slip. Justin Evans from Texas A&M could slip. So just because of how much talent there is in this class, if you're picking at the top of round two, you're getting another first-round pick.
I want to follow up real quick. I got a fan sending names of guys that want me to ask you about. Two wide receivers that could be mid-round picks. Malachi Dupree out of LSU. And then I'm going to screw this up. Amba Edetowo out of Syracuse. Did I get it?
Yeah, you got it. So Edetowo is a weird kid because he was at Maryland with Syracuse. He's really slow. So I think that's going to be the biggest issue.
Probably not a great trait for a wide receiver,
not
by the way.
Not a great trait. And he oddly had a lot of drops at Maryland, but he went to Syracuse, and the drops kind of went away. So I'm not the biggest fan of his. Malachi Dupree, on the other hand, just no production in college. And you could point to the quarterback situation there, but a lot of speed. You know, this is a good event for him. I think he'll do really well here.
I want to ask you about a Jersey guy who you just mentioned before in passing, but I don't want to gloss it over because everyone back home is going to want to know.
Oh, yeah.
Jabril Peppers, who so many people think can play like five different positions in the NFL. Where are you projecting him?
Man, I wish he could play running back. I would love to project him.
I've heard some people say that.
You're the third person to say that
to us this
weekend.
He's so good with the ball in his hand. So he's 213 right now, so he's like a little heavy to be a safety. He's a little light to be a linebacker. I think what I tweeted this morning, and a lot of people jumped on me about it, was I was actually encouraged that he was 213 because if he's trying to play linebacker, he's gaining weight. He played at 200 pounds, so now he's 213. That tells me he could probably get to 225. But the thing I like about Jabril, he's a great athlete, and he's had success at every level. So he's more of a guy you're going to have to mold because he's not a corner. He's not a true safety. He's not a true linebacker. But as defenses get smaller and more versatile and they look for more of those hybrid roles, year one, if he comes in built like a safety like he was at Michigan, year one, he could be a great return man for you at a minimum. And yeah. You can kind of develop him into a player that could play safety for you, either free or strong safety or nickel linebacker. But he's just not a plug-and-play guy. But he is someone who has the athleticism to be developed into a spot.
Could he be a receiver?
I don't know. Maybe. He's a little short would be the thing for a receiver, so he'd have to play in the slot. But he is so shifty with the ball in his hands. But, you know, when he was coming out of Jersey, he didn't want to play running back. You know, he told Michigan, I'm not playing running back. So I would love to talk to him and just say, where do you want to play, and are you going to make that an issue? Because we've heard guys in the past, Shaq Thompson, I'm a linebacker. Mm-hmm. Tevin Coleman, I'm a linebacker. Excuse me, Tevin Smith said he was a linebacker.
Right.
Sua Cravens, you know, came out and said, I'm a linebacker. Now he's playing safety. So it's not like, you know, you never get a great feel for these kids. But it's important to ask them, where do you see yourself playing in the NFL? And are you going to make that an issue?
It's funny, you know, you say Tevin Smith, and, you know, that was, what, 2 or 3 years ago now? And
yeah. That's
when people are like, a 220-pound linebacker, how are you going to do that? Now you got a million 225-pound linebackers coming out. That's amazing.
Deion Jones could have been Rookie of the Year, and he played at, like, 225.
I know.
So I'm not too worried about it anymore.
Can preppers cover tight ends? Because
think,
that is such an important spot now that NFL teams have to find.
I think he can. He's going to have to learn how to flip his hips a little bit, but the athleticism is there. You know, like, what I don't know if he can do is, and I would never want to put him in a situation where he has to beat a guard to the running back, because he's not going to be able to run through blockers. But if you get him on the field, let him play in space, I think he can be a pretty electric guy.
Good stuff. All right, now, thank you, New Jersey guys.
Yeah.
I know they've been asking about him now for, even though the Giants don't really need a safety,
right.
At least we don't think so. So many people have been talking about
him. Could use a linebacker, though.
Yeah.
You don't draft those in the first round for the Giants, though. That's, Jerry Reese doesn't do that.
Is Peppers going to be a first-round pick?
I would think that he is a late first-round pick when it's all said and done, just because of the upside that he brings.
Okay.
Yeah, well, and again, the special teams quotient is also off the mark.
Yeah.
I mean, he's crazy.
He's a great returner. That's where his best value is immediately.
All right, I want to ask you about, go back to the running backs. We've been asking a lot of our guys about running backs. And we think, at least John and I think we're on the same page with this whole thing that the Giants need an earth, wind, and fire combination in their backfield, which means a power back to supplement Paul Perkins.
Yeah.
In your mind, where can they get one second, third, fourth round? Because you're not going to draft one in the first round because Fournette's not going to be there.
Right. No matter how short his vertical jump was, he's not going to be there. the power backs that I like in this class, I like Samaje Perine from Oklahoma. He's probably a third-round guy.
You just made him very happy,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, because, I mean, gosh, that kid, he's put together. James Conner at Pitt is, you know, with him, you've got the cancer thing that's scary. So he might be a, you know, fifth, sixth-round pick. Jamal Williams is a guy a lot of my colleagues on Twitter like. Jamal Williams, I'm not as high on him. I think he's more of a mid-round back just because he doesn't have a lot of speed. But if you're drafting him for a role, because I like Paul Perkins a lot, so if you're drafting a complement to that, then someone like that makes a lot more sense.
Interesting. How about the tackle class?
It's just bad.
That's what everyone said to us.
I don't know if they've used that word, but lackluster, maybe going downhill.
I was going to use a different word, but I didn't know what the censoring was, you know.
It's certainly not as spectacular as some wanted to believe a month or two ago. Let's put it that way.
You know, it's probably not as bad as some people are making it out to be right now either. I think, you know, Garrett Bowles is an interesting kid. He's going to be 25 as a rookie.
Is he your top guy?
He's my top guy. He's going to look great here. Ryan Ramczyk's a good player. They both only started 1 year at D1 football. That's a concern for me. Cam Robinson, there's not a great track record of Alabama offensive linemen, so that's an issue. There are some off-field things to think about with him. Weight has been a problem, so I think he might be a guard or right tackle in the pros. But, you know, Forrest Lamp might be the best offensive lineman in the class, probably not getting enough love because people thought he was a little short or a little short-armed. I watched him shut down 3 first-round picks from Alabama in a game, so I'm not worried about how long his arms are. He's a really good player. He might be a right guard, but he could be a Zach Martin type that's a Pro Bowler right away.
Which one of those tackles do you think has the best chance to step in and be a left tackle, either right away or at some point, Ramczyk or Bowles?
I think Bowles does. And I love Garrett Bowles because he plays with a mean streak. Like, the biggest knock on him is that he's a little bit old. But, you know, I think with team building, if you draft a guy in the first round, you only worry about the first 5 years. He would be 30 at the end of his first contract. That's fine. You know, he can play.
Right. Especially for an offensive lineman.
It's not like he's a running back. So I'm not as worried about it with Bowles. And what I love about the kid, in August, he stepped on the University of Utah campus and became the starting left tackle. And that's a good football school. Like, that's a good program. So the ability to adapt and transition, and he got better throughout the season. Like, you saw improvement from him week to week to week. So I really like his upside. I know he's training with Joe Staley, and I'm a big Joe Staley fan, and they are very similar. Guys who are a little bit light, but very, very mean and very physical.
One other name that Mike Farmer, one of our listeners, wanted me to ask about, Paul, real quick. He's a Kentucky alum, so he's biased, and he's a lunatic. But he wanted me to make sure I asked you about John Toth, their center.
Yeah, you know, I get asked about him a lot. I think he's probably a late-round guy, but he will play in the NFL. Like, he does have that ability. I think this will be big for him, wanting to see, you know, the hips and the feet as well. How does he shadow? And how does he mirror? That's so important for centers. You know, you don't have to be the strongest, biggest guy in the world, but just how well do you keep up with what's in front of you? So I think he'd be great, especially for a zone scheme where he's not asked to just manhandle nose tackles on his own. You know, somewhere like San Francisco in the late round with Kyle Shanahan and how he likes to move people around would be a great fit.
I got one other versatile guy I want to ask you about. You know who it's going to be? McCaffrey.
I love the kid.
What kind of role is he going to have in the NFL, and do you think he could be there at 23 for the Giants? We had one of our experts earlier today say he should be their pick.
I think he will be there, and I would dance for that pick because I think, you know, what will his role be? I know what his role should be, and he should be a three-down player because he has inside-outside vision. He's quick. He catches the ball very well. He's tougher than people give him credit for, so I hear people say, oh, he's a third-down back. I don't think that's true. I think he's a guy you want to get the ball to 20 times a game, 22 times a game, and just be creative with how you use him. So if Ben McAdoo wants to commit to, okay, we're going to get this guy touches and we're going to let him operate in space, that would be great. Natural fits for him, Kansas City, I think would be a great fit because Andy Reid has experience with guys like that.
Right.
I think Seattle, they would have to change their mentality a little bit because they've been such a power run team. But him and Russell Wilson together in the backfield would be a pretty beautiful thing.
Can Njoku develop into enough of a blocker to be a consistent three-down player as a, not a dominant run blocker, but a guy that's good enough that gets in the way to help your running
game? Yeah, I actually think he's a pretty good run blocker now. Like, he's not O.J. Howard, but he's good enough, like you said. I remember Vernon Davis coming out of Maryland and thinking, God, this guy's an athlete, but he can't block to save his life. And he became one of the best blocking tight ends in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And with Njoku, I see the same kind of athleticism where, and he is a worker. This isn't an Eric Ebron where he's just going to show up and want to catch passes in space. Like, Njoku will line up. He played a lot on the line at Miami. I'm not worried about if he has the want to. I think he's got the wiring to be a good blocker.
All right, I got one, I don't want to say negative, but who's going to be the biggest surprise drop in the first round? Because every year somebody gets some in shoes.
Yeah, I think it's Dalvin Cook. And that has nothing to do with, he's not testing well so far today. And
is
we'll
he going to 23?
Put it all together.
That's surprising. A lot of people thought he was going to test off the charts,
he
right?
He ran a 4.50 at 210
did he really?
Pounds. That's not great for him. And he verticaled, I think it was 30 and a half inches. That's not good for him either. And so the reason I say, I said this last week on radio, I thought he could drop because the off-field issues, there's a weird pattern there of problems for him. He's had four or five run-ins since high school. He's had shoulder surgeries. He's had hamstring issues. And he has fumble problems. And now you're not testing well. I think that might end up being the least talked about story of this whole draft season, is that Dalvin Cook has probably been overrated by myself and a lot of people.
Who's been underrated?
Leonard Fournette. Underrated. I think guys like Solomon Thomas have been a little underrated, and you're starting to see the correction for that now. Mike Williams from Clemson has probably been underrated because he's not the fastest guy, but he's just a big physical wide receiver.
Is he your top wide out
he's
over Corey Davis?
He's my top wide out, yeah. Or Mike Williams is right above Corey Davis for me right now. So. Okay. Two very, very good receivers, but I tend to go for the more physical guy.
How do you separate the corners at the top of the class?
Because
there's
hard.
So many good ones.
And it's so much about corner anymore. It's about scheme fit. So for like a press coverage scheme, I like Quincy Wilson. For, you know, if you're going to play off and attack a little bit more, I like Marshon Lattimore because he has better ball skills. He's a little quicker to flip those hips and run. So it just becomes a – that's probably the hardest part about my job is you try to make a big board, you know, top 400 players, but – if you're a team like Seattle or, you know, San Francisco or Jacksonville, you're going to look for different things. So your number one corner might be my number six corner, but he fits your scheme a little bit better.
I'm going to have a little fun with you. My final question. We still have time?
Of course. Go ahead.
The most biggest sleeper of the quarterbacks, a Prescott or a Brady, who's going to go 4, 5, 6, all the way at the bottom of the draft,
oh, wow,
and the guy's going to wind up being a starter in the NFL someday.
Keep in mind, those guys show up once every 10 years, so good luck, Matt.
If I had to bet on a late-round guy, it'd be Cooper Rush from Central Michigan. I think he's a fun player to watch. He has the tools, like the poise is there. But, you know, this quarterback class, everyone talks about, oh, it's not very good. It's actually really deep. there's just not that Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota or Andrew.
Well, a lot of separation.
A lot of separation, a lot of tiers. But, yeah, if we're going deep dive on quarterbacks, Cooper Rush would be the guy I'll go with.
All right, Matt, give me your prediction for 23, and you will be able to change it when we have you on again before the draft. Early pick, pre-combine, or mid-combine.
This is tough. You know what? I'll go with Dalvin Cook. I think he falls to 23 and has the pick for the Giants.
Wow. We have one listener that loves Dalvin Cook. You just made his day.
Well, I probably ruined his day about 30 seconds ago before talking about it, so I made it up to you.
No, because you said he might be there.
Yeah, he might be there. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Matt, great stuff. We appreciate it. Thanks
so much.
Enjoy
it, man. Thank you.
Thanks. Listeners, thanks for being part of the show. Thanks for sending in all the tweets, all the player names. I got to all of them except for like two or three. I did my best. But seriously, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for being part of the program. Paul, it's great to have you out here at the Combine for the first time. Hope you had a good time. I know we did a lot of good information. And of course, we'll be back with you at our normal time at noon on Monday for 1 hour back in East Rutherford, New Jersey for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Paul and Lance will be with you. Thanks so much for joining us as we continue with Combine coverage all weekend long on Giants.com. Make sure you stay tuned for more interviews. We talk with some of the scouts and all that, and we cover the events as well. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com all weekend long. For Paul Dottino, our list of guests, Tom Rock, Rick Saratella, Jerry Ventress, Mike Renner, Paul Schwartz, Steve Palazzolo, Dane Brugler, Alex Marvez, Kyle Krabs, Joe Corey, Ralph Vacchiano, Tony Pauline, Bob Glauber, Rob Rang, John Ledyard, and Matt Miller. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your weekend.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
Intercepted by Apple.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Rubens on the pipe, fumble the football.
Bang.
Pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
The jump ball, Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.